I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Congratulations. Your morning just got a bit classier. A media legend, a ferocious linebacker, a clueless producer, and you.
Searching for a replacement window online? Visit windownation.com today.
So raise a glass and act accordingly. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, let's do it live on a Monday edition of the program. Dave Biddle in for threes. How you doing, Bids?
I am doing well, Bo. It's big shoes to fill when the little animal is not here, sir. But since I don't have to tackle anybody, I think I'm going to do a good job. Right. So we'll see how it goes. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. I mean, it was a pretty wild and full sports weekend, and we had garbage weather Saturday, decent weather, yet great yesterday. It was amazing. And so there was a lot to take in, but then also you start to get a little bit of the itch. Because football is starting to infringe. Big 12 Media Days last week. We have SEC Media Days ongoing now. And then we're at the end of the week. It's going to be here before you know it. I mean, I think Browns report 2 weeks from Friday. Bengals coming soon as well. Summer's about over, bud.
It really is. It feels like, you know, the yearly trip to Chicago, which won't be Chicago this year. We'll get into that in a second. We didn't even have Big Ten Media Days last year. That's kind of the unofficial end of summer for guys that do what we do, you know. And, it's interesting. But our summer kind of starts early. It feels like after the spring game is kind of when our summer starts. So don't feel sorry for us. I can't wait. I mean, I am so looking forward to Big Ten football this year after having at least we had a season last year. But, you know, quote unquote season. The stat that sticks out to me the most is the Buckeyes had 5 regular season games last year and 3 postseason games. It's just it's just crazy. Of all the crazy things that can go on, I tell you what, man, there's a lot I'm looking forward to. It's going to be an Indy. All of Ohio State stuff is on Friday, the way they break it up. They do, for the listeners out there, I know you know this, Bo, they do 7 teams on Thursday, 7 teams on Friday. So all of Ohio State stuff will be on Friday. It's in Indy this year. We'll see if that becomes a permanent thing or if they'll move it back to Chicago. I imagine they'll move it back to Chicago. That's where it's been for ages.
Easier for BTN.
I'm excited. Right? It's going to be in Indy. I love Chicago. I love it. But, like, everything is right there in Indy, as you know, Bo. So it's like hotels, restaurants, Lucas Oil Stadium. It's all right there. So I cannot wait for a Big Ten Media Days, and college football is going to be here before we know it.
Well, there's been and honestly, like, sometimes I think we make a bigger deal of this. It's because of what we do. Like, I don't know that the average fan, you know, is worried about what the third star, you know, certainly here they would care, but what the third star at Nebraska is doing, because everybody brings 3 players to that thing. But what I do recall from it is, and I remember the first time Nebraska was there, and they brought Levante David and Jared Crick. And that was a big deal, that Nebraska was at Big Ten Media Days. And it's kind of like the day when you realize things have changed, that we've transitioned from 2021 to 22 for the rest of the league. We're used to seeing the Ohio State guys that we're going to see, and Olave, Harrison, who's the 3 that we're sending?
And Thayer Munford.
Thayer, okay. Yep. So, you know, we've talked to those guys a lot. We've seen them. We know who they are, and that kind of is what it is. But in terms of the rest of the league, the Nebraska showing up the first time was a big deal with Crick and those guys. And then the big deal was Harbaugh.
Yeah.
When Harbaugh showed up. That was a big deal when Harbaugh showed up. And we'll get into him in the 10 o'clock hour because when you remember this, it was like Elvis was in the building.
Especially
it really
was.
Like
Urban,
he was a super duper star. Yeah. I mean, he was coming off of any job he wanted in the NFL he could have had, any job in college he could have had, and he chose to come to Michigan. We already had Urban at that time here, and so we knew what Ohio State was all about. But when he was over there, it was like, okay, it's on. It's about to be on.
Yeah, I almost regret saying this, but I remember thinking when Harbaugh was hired, and literally his press conference to be introduced as Michigan's head coach was when we were on the road getting ready to cover Ohio State in, I believe it was before the Alabama game. So, yeah, that we were like in New Orleans watching the press conference. I remember thinking, First of all, hopefully Ohio State, you know, beats Alabama, wins the national championship sure. this year. So that worked out well. But I remember thinking, Bo, we are in for, I was going to call it the 5-year war. I didn't think maybe it was going to last 10 years, but I thought it was going to be a back and forth 5-year war. Instead, Ohio State has just destroyed them. Yeah, 2016 was close, but the other games, not close. I mean, 2017 was somewhat close. The game Dwayne had to come in. They won that game 31-20, but that was the closest other than 2016. The rest have all been blowouts. I never saw this coming. And you're right about Harbaugh being a, you know, he is. Urban was the same way. They always split up Ohio State and Michigan, and they still do that. Like, even this week, they have Harbaugh going last on Thursday and Ryan Day going last on Friday, which is the same thing they would do. Urban would walk in, it was just like the Beatles were here, you know. Harbaugh would walk in, it was like, you know whatever.
Well, they were coming off of Brady too. Like, he was, you know, Brady was so out of his depth, you know it was Rich and Brady, and they neither one was, Brady tried, and honestly, if you think about, you know, in, you know, their program, you know, Rich left it far worse than he got it. It was in pretty good shape when he got it, and that was an unmitigated disaster. Hoke left it a lot better shape than he got it. They're pretty good. I mean, he actually won some recruiting wars. I mean, we remember those. He won some recruiting wars, even against us. And Harbaugh, compared to where he picked it up, he stabilized immediately, but he hasn't been interested in recruiting and development, and that's been his undoing. So, it is. And I think it's a big, I think it's a huge year for him. And we'll get into that as one of our 20 questions going into next season. But I'm excited for it. I'm excited for the media. I'm excited to kind of get the football juices flowing. SEC Media Day is going, I think they start today. Who, if you had to pick, who's going to say something that's going to grab a headline? And we'll get to, in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to get into these Texas A&M kids who are making money off interviews. Which coach down there in SEC, in Hoover is going to be the one to make a little attention this week?
Oh, I was thinking, you're going to ask me about Big Ten. I was going to go with Bielema. I think he's going to say something stupid. But
well, he has to go, right?
SEC?
He's at Illinois. Like, what's he going to do? He's got to try. I wish he wasn't there. I wish he was at Michigan. Honestly, like, he's such a great enemy. Like, it stinks he's in Illinois.
Yeah, so I'll go with Lane Kiffin. I mean, right? Is that the easiest pick? I mean, he's out there recruiting well, which is, you know.
You knew he would.
Fill in the joke there about Ole Miss when they're recruiting well, right? But, like,
we can't even take umbrage with that anymore. Because there is no cheating in recruiting.
Well, no, I disagree. You can still double dip. You can have the bag man, you know, give you something under the table and do the NIL, you know. So,
Fitz, there is no NCAA anymore. They've pushed the chips in. They don't care. It's over.
Oh, I hear you on that.
They're not administering anything. I mean, it's done. It's going to be crazy. Absolute bonkers we're headed for. I think you have it, though. I think Kiffin, he would probably be an odds-on favorite. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if something happens in the Mullen Smart, you know, that there's maybe some back and forth between them. That thing is crazy. That's the craziest thing you've ever seen, is that thing in Hoover with the way the SEC did it. And the others have followed suit. The SEC always went early. Usually they go last week, but the Big 12 moved up. Big 10 moved up. Usually we were like last week of July, weren't we, historically?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that they eventually figured, like, okay, maybe we should move this up and get with the party a little bit so we're not forgotten about. Because by the time the Big Ten would go, people would have, like, fatigue of media days. Like, fans around the country, even if you're a Big Ten fan, you're probably watching SEC media days today. You're just so glad college football's here. Not actually games yet, obviously, but, man, it's just around the corner, and media days are fun. They really are.
They are.
Whether you're watching them from home, whether you're there covering them. I mean, because it's like nothing else, as you know, Bo, where you get every head coach there. You get three players, and they're three, you know, of the top players from each team there, and all the media covering, you know, the different teams, and not just like the beat writers, but the TV guys are there, radio guys are there. It's really, really cool. It's like, it's unlike anything else. A bunch of former players from all the schools are there. Fans are there. It's just such a cool event, and it's one of those things that, you know, I really missed last year. One of the many things that, we missed about 2020.
Well, and I think the other thing about it, and I think the reason it, and we've had some big ones, and obviously Urban responding to the Zach Smith stuff, that was a big day. It was a big day because nobody
sure
knew how that was going to go, and how it went kind of dictated what happened on that front. But I mean, it was it's the first time for a coach to be on the record about, you know, something that happened this summer. And so this name, image, and likeness thing, I think, is going to be something that they're all going to try to clear the hurdle on it, and I think it's going to be a moving target. So I think it's going to be tough, but we'll get into that. Lots of fun. I saw this from your Cincinnati Bengals here in the last 10 minutes. So they tweeted this out.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. No, it's good news, I think. Today we set the tone for the 2021 season as we launch our new campaign, Rule the Jungle. Build, win, rule. This is the path forward. I can't tell. So it says, Rule the Jungle signifies the high standard and energy we expect to see on the field, in the stands, and in all areas of our organization. The rule is powerful. Great empires are built by the bold. That's the, I'm wondering if it's just like a marketing line.
Yeah, it seems has to like be it, because right? When I hear Empire and Cincinnati Bengals, even being a diehard Bengal fan, I sit here and laugh. I can imagine what Steeler fans think about that when they hear that.
Right.
Man, you know what? I like the direction of the organization. I'm not, and I've been very critical of them. I mean, they're actually spending money. This is now two off seasons where they've spent money. It really feels like Mike Brown's finally, there's talk he's given up control to Katie Blackburn and some of the other people in the front office. Sounds like that's actually happened finally. But still, they're not there yet, and I need to see it to believe. But I believe in Joe Burrow 100%. I love that they have him, even coming off the leg injury. They're doing some good things down there, but I'm still not sold on Zach Taylor. He's probably better than what I thought he was. I thought he was going to be a complete bust. I've seen some good things with him, and his players really like him. We'll see. This is a make-or-break year for him. He can't have another terrible year. So, that's definitely marketing. That's definitely marketing. How about they win a playoff game for the first time since the Bo Jackson game? And that was 1990. 1990 was the last time they've won.
Is that real?
Even going into last year before the Browns beat the Steelers, I always was pointing out, the Browns have won a playoff game more recently than the Bengals because the Browns won one in 95. Yeah, the Bo Jackson curse is real. They tackled Bo Jackson.
Oh, my gosh. I guess in my mind's eye. Yeah, I remember that vividly. I was a huge Bo guy with the name being similar. I was big into the Bo Nose world, but I remember that game vividly, but I guess I just assumed they won one again with Boomer, and I guess in my head I thought they won one with Carson.
They did not. They they had that good start against the Steelers where Carson had that bomb to Chris Henry, but he got his leg just completely
Kimmy Van Olhoffen,
just bent up against Van Olhoffen, a former Bengal, just dove in there. Now wouldn't have mattered. It still would have hurt him. Now that would have been a penalty. It wasn't even a penalty back then. And they almost beat him. They almost beat him the one time when McCarron was playing quarterback because Dalton was hurt, and that's the game where it was Jeremy Hill fumbled late, and then you had Pac-Man Jones with some stupid, or maybe it was Burfict. One of the idiots had some some helmet-to-helmet call where the Steelers were able to win. But, yeah, the Bengals have not. They beat the Oilers in 1990. They blew them out, and then next week they played the L.A. Raiders in L.A.
Sure.
And a linebacker named Walker tackled Bo and ended his career, and the Bengals have not won a playoff game since.
Man, I didn't realize it was that. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. So, yeah, I mean, they're probably not there yet, but I'm with you. I think I love their offense. I mean, I think they're going to be a lot of fun. I think when you're building something, like you're not looking. From my perspective, I'm a Bengals fan. I'm not worried about playoffs. I just want it to look like right with Joe. Like go 8-9, go 7-10.
Right.
Just have him throw for 4,500 yards, 32 touchdowns, 12 picks, and then I'm like, okay, we're good. We're good. That's all I need to see. And then next year we start to go, because I think offensively, to me, they're the second scariest team in the division. I mean, I don't know if you saw Roethlisberger's arm the last half of the season, but it ain't there. And I don't know that it's going to get better in an offseason. And I think the Ravens are really scary on a one-off, but I think when you have time, I don't know that it's sustainable. I think it's a big year for them, too. And I hear all this stuff about they're going to put Lamar under center. I do not have any interest in that. Like, let him be him. So I love that Bengals offense. I think it's going to be pretty scary. We had a... really fun sports weekend. Lots to get to on that front. We will get into that coming up here in a second. An all-time Buckeye great retires from the league. We will get to that. Your Columbus Blue Jackets protected, unprotected list. We'll tell you who did it, who made it, and who didn't, and why it's significant. Question number 6 of our 20 questions that we need answered over the course of the next year is on Michigan football. Angelique Chinguelos will join us of the Detroit News to discuss Jim Harbaugh and where he is and where he is not as a program. Plus, Big Ten Media Days, we're paying athletes for interviews now. Is that a dangerous trend? It's a wild trend. I don't know how you're going to govern it. So a lot to get to. Thrilled to have Biddle in for Laurinaitis today. Off and running on a Monday. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here in the Fan.
We are everywhere. On your radio. Online. The Fan app. Alexa. And behind you in your car. Right now.
Too creepy?
Sorry. The Fan. Ohio sports destination. First Fridays are a thing. Drinking bad bourbon is not a thing. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
And brought to you by our great friends at Window Nation. If you're in need or search for replacement windows, I encourage you to check them out at windownation.com. They will take care of you the way that they take care of us at 866-90-NATION today. Dave Biddle in for threes today and for the next couple of days as well. What were you most interested in from a sports capacity this weekend? You had Open Championship, you had the NBA Finals, baseball back, obviously. You had the crew with getting their first win at the new dig, so that was cool as well. What caught your attention most?
It was a great weekend, but unfortunately, the thing that I was most invested in was the Reds, and they got swept, so that was bad. But I love seeing Morikawa win yesterday. We had a chance right before he blew up on these very airwaves last year. He was on. I was co-hosting with Anthony Rothman, and Anthony got him on Rothman and
Ice. He was on the show?
He was on the show, and it was when he was in town, and he had just won in Columbus and then was playing in the Memorial. But it was before, obviously, he won the PGA. So it was right before he blew up as a big star, and it was such a cool interview. And Anthony has a great nickname for him, Mora Cowbell. And
right.
Here's a funny part of the story. So he asked him about it. He's like, hey, I got to let you know. Oh, and I think it's the name of Anthony's like fantasy golf team. He's like, I named my fantasy golf team Mora Cowbell. He's like, do you even know that SNL skit? And Colin Morikawa was like, you know, trying to be polite, but he was like, no, sir, I don't. And Anthony's like, yeah, we're showing our age here. So that was just a funny story. So, we got a chance to interview him right here in the Fan right before he blew up as a big star. So he's kind of become my favorite golfer, and it was really cool seeing him win. He's an absolute machine. But what was your favorite thing over the weekend, Bo?
That was it. I love the Open. I love it. It's my favorite major. I love the idea of it being on when I wake up. I love the idea of them having to hit shots that they don't normally hit because the courses are so different. I mean, the rest of the golf that I watch, obviously, is on traditionally American courses where the shots are pretty similar. You drive it down the middle, you hit it to the green, you go putt. And here, you don't necessarily pull driver. You don't necessarily, you have to worry about bounce. You have to worry about swales. I mean, we had moguls in the fairway yesterday. At the course in England. And so I love the fact that it just looks different from everything else we play. And then when you add to it the fact that they had stunning weather. I mean, there wasn't wind. There wasn't rain. I mean, it was just, yesterday was 80 and bluebird day. Like, that never happens. It was the warmest day of the year in England, and they had it yesterday. So they had these flawless conditions. I thought it was cool how I love how you hit a perfect drive, but you don't know how it's going to bounce because the fairways are rock hard. So it can go any number of places, and they're trying to make sense of it. I thought that was great. I thought Spieth was awesome and put all the pressure you could have on Morikawa. And I think in order for it to be great, you had to have that, right? You had to have the pressure, and nobody else was willing or able to do that, and Spieth did. And for Morikawa to, you said machine, that's pretty close to what it was. It was almost, you know, kind of reminded you of when Koepka, you know, would won those back-to-back PGA, U.S. Open and PGAs. Like, just unflappable. Just completely, it appeared to be completely void of nerve. Even when he was in trouble, would quickly get out of it, hit it, and he wasn't in trouble much. But when he was, he would save par and was just a cool customer. And now joins Tiger Woods as guys who've won the PGA and Open before they're 25. So that's a pretty remarkable company.
Yeah, that's a good list to be on. You and Tiger are the only ones that have ever done this. I mean, he's not going anywhere. I mean, he's an old school golfer, as they were saying, you know, on the telecast yesterday. I mean, he's a guy, he's like 114th in drive distance, but like, you know, second in accuracy and first in a lot of categories. He's an old school player that relies on accuracy. He's not trying to crush the ball out there. And he put on a show. And again, 24 years old, as I said, he's 24 going on 40. He's so mature. And I tell you what, even the ceremony afterward, you could see it, the way he was introducing the amateur champion or the guy that finished highest as far as the amateurs. He just has a presence about him, Morikawa does, where he is just, unflappable is a great word for him. On the course, off the course, and we could be looking at a guy that's going to be an absolute superstar. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to finish with like five majors in his career. We'll see how many he gets to, but I think he's going to win quite a few.
You know, it's so hard with these kids, though, because the same we would have said about Spieth, the same we would have said about Rory, and probably others that, oh boy, they're going to win 10. They're going to win 8 or 9. But the hard thing with these guys now is, and a lot of it's because of what Tiger did to the game, like financially, they're set. And usually financially, you know, money is a big motivator. Let's win. Let's make, you know, that's a big motivator in this. But like so many of these guys are so set financially that you just wonder if the drive is the same as it was. It's pretty remarkable that Rory's gone now, what, 7 years without winning a major? Seven full seasons since he won a major. I want to say his last one was a PGA at down in Louisville. It was the last time that he won a major. And the same, you think about Spieth, how quickly he won those majors. And he hasn't won in a while. And you just wonder, like, it takes somebody special to have the thing that defines you be not financial. And I have to think it contributes. I mean, Rory's worth a couple hundred million dollars. You know, is he grinding the same way he was when he was coming up? I don't know. I don't know if he is or not. Use him as the example just because of all the talent. And he played himself out of it early in this one. I think about Ricky Fowler that way. I mean, Ricky Fowler's in, you watch a golf tournament, he's in every other commercial. But he's not won a major.
Never won a major.
You know? No.
But he's loaded. You're right. That's a great point. Like, yeah, if he wasn't literally a multimillionaire, would he have more of a drive to be a great golfer? I mean, it's a great question. I'm sure he trains hard.
Are you grinding?
But what, is he training hard as he would? You know, does some of that hunger go away? I think it's a great point because I remember thinking the same thing that I just said about Morikawa with Spieth. I just have a different feeling. Morikawa just seems like maybe he just kind of, there's something different about him. Again, it's easy to say that now when he's coming off his second major. Really easy to say that, you know, the day after, especially as well as he played. But it does seem something different about him. But yeah, I remember saying the same thing about Spieth. I'm like, man, he's going to win like 10. And he's still stuck on 3. But he's coming back though. He looked really
good
yesterday. He looked really good.
That was awesome.
And he had those two bogeys. You're thinking, oh well, he's done. And then bam, gets the eagle to get back to 9 under, and then just took off from there. And yeah, and you're right. It would still have been fun to see Morikawa win, but like it wouldn't have been as fun if Spieth didn't step up because Louis completely went away.
He completely went away. It was cool just even though it was a 2-shot lead. I would have loved for it to be a 1-shot lead. But even a 2-shot lead and having Morikawa have to drive it down the middle on 18. Like, just the little pressure of that. And then he had to step away from the ball. So, that gives you a little bit of juice. NBA Finals, the Bucks have won 3 in a row. They can close it out tomorrow. I'm a little surprised this game isn't tonight. I don't know why. I don't know if there's market research that says Tuesdays are better than Mondays. That's why they're doing it Tuesday. But they played Game 5 was on Saturday. So, are they in the same place? Or are they in? No, they're in.
No, they're
in.
Yeah,
are they doing? I think okay, it goes so it's a 5-6-7. They're going seven. A 3-2.
Yeah.
Or 2-2-1-1-1.
Yeah.
Okay, so Milwaukee can win at home.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So this is crazy, man. When it got to 2-0, I would have bet heavy. Good thing I didn't.
Yeah.
I would have bet heavy that the Suns were going to win the series. Like a lot. If you're, you know, 2-0, like maybe they won't sweep, maybe they win in 5, but they're going to win the series, and maybe they still will, but man, I did not see the Bucks coming back like this. And good, it's made it a very intriguing series.
Yeah, and I think the ascent of Giannis now, because, I mean, if he can close this out, and he's had some moments in this series, you know, the baseline-to-baseline alley-oop, the play where he blocks the shot on the alley-oop. I mean, he's had some moments, and he's just been brilliant. So this can kind of change the trajectory of his career if he can close this out and win this series in 6 at home in Milwaukee. Good to see the Crew get the first win at the new dome as well, the new stadium. They went 2-1 over New York, so that was fun to see. A little bit of that over the weekend as well, and to see the enthusiasm kind of carry over from the opener to the second game there. We had a big retirement on Friday. Friday afternoon, a big retirement from the NFL. We'll reflect on Ted Ginn Jr. coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
The biggest guess, earth-shattering opinions, and Maddie making Anthony do push-ups during commercial breaks.
I can't feel my legs.
My bad, bro.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan. It's Bishop and Laurinaitis is What's Up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by your Central Ohio Honda dealers.
All right, here's what's up on a Monday edition. Teddy Ginn Jr. retiring, which makes us all feel old. We acknowledge that right away, that he's retiring from the NFL. 14 seasons in the league. Boy, time flies. Bids, I have seen, unfortunately, I have seen Ted Ginn Jr. play one play in person. And that was it. It was that one. And at the time, I was in Florida, and was covering that national championship game from the Florida side of things. And
oh
I actually
gosh.
Moved to Columbus 4 months later. So I covered Florida, Ohio State in the football game from the Florida side of things. And then I covered the Final Four national championship game from the Florida side of things. And I moved to Columbus in May of 2007. And so that's how that lined up. So I saw him play one play. And it's interesting, but the one play, when he did it, I thought, well, this is going to be a beatdown. This is what this is going to be, because that dude is there's nothing I've ever seen like that dude as fast as he was. He was shot out of a cannon and returned it for a touchdown. And then, of course, we know the history from that point. My guess is you've seen a lot more Ted Ginn Jr. plays in person than I have, and as you would. But he was an electric player, and kind of, to me at least, and I'm curious where you sit on this, when I think back of Tressel's early success in recruiting, he's one of the first names I think of because of how big of a deal Ted Ginn Jr. was and the pipeline that opened up in part because of him. And you covered it more than I. That's my perception from somebody who wasn't here. Where do you sit on when I say that name to you, Ted Ginn Jr.?
Yeah, a couple things come to mind. First of all, he's the fastest Ohio State player that I've covered, and maybe that I've seen, even going back to when I was a fan from a little kid. And that's saying a lot, considering some of the speed burners. I think Joey Galloway ran like 4.2 at the combine. So, and Galloway can bench like 500. He's a freak. So, Terry Glenn.
Still is.
There's some others, but as far as, and maybe it would be combine speed, but as far as just pure football speed, and again, I don't say this lightly, he's the fastest, Ted Ginn. And then, yeah, you hit it. That Cleland-Glenville pipeline was so good to Ohio State. It's kind of dried up a little bit, mostly because seniors now, not involved in all of that. But, yeah, that was huge. I mean, look at all the guys they got. I mean, Ted Ginn being the biggest name as far as lengthy NFL career, but Troy Smith, was from there on and on and on. Marshawn Lattimore. I mean, we can name so many guys from Cleveland Glenville.
Yeah.
So those are the two biggest things. And you do wonder because, Tress was not, I'm the biggest Tressel fan you're going to find. He wasn't the national recruiter that Urban is or was. He's not the national recruiter that Ryan Day and his staff are right now. But, man, he locked down the state of Ohio, and that's what they needed to do. When he took over, I mean, Michigan owned Ohio State, and Tressel called his shot from day one. He said, in 310 days, gave the 310-day speech. Not really a guarantee, but pretty much a guarantee. And then he pulls it off, goes 9-1 against Michigan. Ted Ginn, another thing that stands out about Ted Ginn, we'll all remember the draft. When the Dolphins drafted him, Dolphins fans are booing. They wanted Brady Quinn. And how you like me now? 14 years in the league. Was he a superstar in the NFL? No, but he had a really, really good NFL career and a very lengthy one. And he will be a rich man for years to come. Feels so great for Ted Ginn. I always thought he was going to, what's funny? I covered his recruitment a little bit because I did recruiting back then. That's all you talk about showing my age. I thought he'd be a corner.
Yeah.
And when he showed up at Ohio State, throughout his freshman year, Bo, people were asking him, Ted, you going to play? And going into a sophomore year, Ted, you going to play both ways this year? We were all convinced he's going to play corner, right? That's where his future is going to play. Or maybe he's going to play both ways like Chris Gamble did. We're the same unit. It's the same number, number seven. It was so funny. That was a big storyline. And Tress was like, no, he's a punt returner and he's a wide receiver. That's what he's going to do.
Wasn't he the USA Today to Defensive Player of the Year? Do I have that right?
I think that was something like that, which is why we all assume.
That was a big deal in those days. Like they would, right around Christmas time, USA Today would put their high school All-American teams out. And it was offensive and defensive players of the year. And I want to say that Teddy won that. I could be wrong, but I want to say that he won defensive player of the year. You bring up a great point, and it's one that I think the kids need to pay attention to. You have to remember that at that time, when Tress took over the job, Michigan not only owned Ohio State on the football field, they did a nice job in the state of Ohio recruiting. They got after it. They won a lot of battles, especially in Northeast Ohio.
Charles Woodson.
And for, I mean, their most important players oftentimes are Ohioans. You look back and you think to yourself, what Jim Tressel had to do at that time was he had to turn the spigot off. And he had to put a wall around the state of Ohio, and especially Northeast Ohio. Because that is where you're talking about the Cleveland area, you're talking about Stark County, Summit County, and Akron. Those areas are hotbeds in recruiting, and they still are pretty strong even to this day. Not what they were, but still very strong to this day. But those are battles that he had to win. And when I think of those players, I mean, I think of Teddy, Obviously, I mean, you think of Zwick. You think
Clarett,
of guys who were
Clarett was
Clarett
huge too.
Was a monster. That, it's a great point. Yeah,
and he was on record. I should have brought this up. He was on record because Maurice wasn't afraid to tell you anything. If Cooper was still the coach, I wouldn't be here. He probably would have went.
Would
to
he
Michigan.
Have been at Michigan?
He probably would have went to Michigan. He flat out said, if Cooper was still here, can you blame him? I mean, Cooper went 2-10-1 against Michigan. People say, well, Cooper was good except for Michigan. That's not true. There are things called bowl games. Cooper was 3-8 in bowl games. Didn't even make a bowl twice. So it wasn't that he just wasn't good against Michigan. He wasn't good against pretty much in big games, period. He beat Notre Dame a couple of times. He was good against Penn State overall, but it was Michigan and bowl games. Yeah, and Clarett, that was the one that really got things going for Tressel. Although Ginn was ranked even higher than Clarett, but Clarett, because it was so early and everybody wanted him, and Clarett saying, I wouldn't have taken this, I would have taken this job. I wouldn't be a Buckeye if Tressel wasn't here. And then both being from Youngstown certainly helped.
Clarett, a USA Today Offensive Player of the Year, and you were correct, Bo. Ted Ginn, 2003. Defensive player of the year by USA Today. The year before him, Antonio Cromartie. So it shows you the level of player there.
Yeah, so
on that defensive player of the year. The USA Today defensive player of the year, Teddy Ginn.
I covered Antonio Cromartie. He was a Tallahassee Lincoln kid. So I covered him in high school as well. And so I remember those kids kind of all matching up at that point. He was a stunning talent. And it's a good point on Clarett because, that area, if you think like Prescott Burgess goes to Michigan. Like they were getting those kids that were close there. Crable was a kid out of Maslin. Like they were getting kids from that area that were becoming good, really good, great players at Michigan, and Tress shut it down. Mm-hmm. Said, these are my guys and I got them now. And that was, if you think about Tressel's success, it is on the backs of Ohioans. It wasn't until the end that he was getting Pryor in Pennsylvania and getting Shugerts and Brewster from Florida and Texas. I mean, that was something that he was putting a rope around Ohio and saying, these are my guys, and won a national championship and played for a couple others doing it that way. So, and I always think of Teddy in that. He was pure joy to watch, man. He was fun. He was really fun. And you wonder, what he could have done in an offense like the one we play in now, that wasn't so, traditional, I guess, for lack of a better, it's become traditional now, but a true spread offense or even Urban's offense with the power and those jet sweeps and stuff, because he didn't do that stuff. That's not what you did in those days. I mean, there wasn't the variety for a player of Ted's ability, but an incredible career, and I think he'll go down. I saw this over the weekend. I think he'll go down as one of the coolest. There's a lot of really cool guys who've worn that jersey, but I think his name will consistently be brought up. You mentioned Gamble and Galloway and some of those other guys. I think of Braxton certainly in that category of just looked so cool on a football field. Mike Doss, those guys. And Teddy's one of those guys that you look, that seven and the way it looked, it was just sensational. Really was.
How awesome about that number seven for the Buckeyes? I mean, we just mentioned Galloway, Gamble, Ginn all wore seven. Jermaine wore seven. Going way back, Corny Green, who was a really good quarterback during the Archie Griffin days, wore the number seven. I'm going to leave so many guys out here. I mean, like,
what is the what when you what do you think banks. Is the number?
Well, hopefully 10, 10's been really good. Seven would be in the discussion for sure.
Two's pretty good.
Two's been good, especially this century so far. With Mike Doss,
Chris Carter too.
That's right.
Right? Chris Carter, wasn't he?
That's true. Yeah, good point. Good point.
Yeah.
I'd have to really look at that, but 10's been great for the quarterback position. And CJ Stroud's wearing seven now. So that's good. Who am I leaving out at seven? I feel like I'm leaving out somebody really good.
Yeah, you feel like you're going to offend somebody in the sevens. That's played recently.
No, it's fun. Yeah, but 7 and 10, 2. Yeah, those are probably the three best.
4 is pretty good. Yeah, there's been some good ones to say the least. And certainly when you think of the sevens with a laundry list of stars, Teddy Ginn's name is always going to be one that comes up. The expansion draft in the NHL.
Haskins wore seven.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Oh yeah, Dwayne Tree. Good job out of you, Chopper.
Thanks, Chops.
So it's unfortunate how quickly we forget.
Speaking of Chops, he got punched in the chops. Oh, did I just go there? Poor guy. Dwayne. At least I'll say about that.
People are making fun of him.
At least he didn't hit her back.
Well, Vince, here's what I'll say, though. While we're, let's also be fair. Anytime there's something like that, what led to that?
Right.
You know what I mean? We don't know
she
what
found out. Did. Probably he. She found my
well,
theory. She probably found out about that exchange when he was when he was messaging the Instagram influencer trying to get her to pay back all these gifts that he got for her.
In all seriousness,
probably the fiance found out about that, and that's probably what they were arguing about. But we'll see.
In all seriousness, he's by a thread in the NFL.
Definitely.
So
no doubt.
I mean, and you say, well, what does this have to? Well, it all has to do with decision making.
Right.
It all has to do with decision making. And if you're going to hand the keys to like the Pittsburgh Steelers to somebody, trust. Got to trust. So it's going to be a big next month and a half for him, to say the least. Big month for the Blue Jackets, obviously. The Seth Jones, the draft. We have our expansion protected, unprotected list. We get to that coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Constantly interrupting valuable airtime to sell $3 stickers. What a business plan. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. If you say something with confidence, then you can't be wrong.
I don't even know.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
And Dave Biddle in for threes today and for the next couple of days, leading into Big Ten Media Days on Thursday in Indy. I understand what the NHL is doing with these expansion teams, but I can't help but be a bit bothered by it, that they basically, these teams are getting to start on second base at the very worst. Maybe third. I mean,
we had to start in the dugout.
We had to start at the bottom. Most expansion, you have to start in the bottom. Like, this Seattle Kraken team has, I mean, they could be playoff contenders next year.
Same thing as Vegas. Yep.
Just like Vegas. Vegas played for a cup. Like, yeah. And Vegas has been one of the best clubs in the league the last 3 years. And they're headed there. I mean, you look at, like, Carey Price could be their starting goalie. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy, the amount of talent. And so, some of this is the realities of a very hard salary cap. And an inability to fit all these guys under, and that's part of it. And so they're set up, and if it's done right, they should be a very competitive, really good team right away. The Jackets put their list out over the weekend of protected and unprotected players. I think the one that certainly gets all the attention, and rightfully so, is Max Domi, unprotected. Stenlund on there as well, Dean Kukin, Scotty Harrington. Those guys on there. In terms of beyond that, lower down the roster, no one that I think is too surprising. The name that garners the attention, without question, is Max Domi. And it's more of a symbol, I think, of, and I don't think this isn't reinventing the wheel, but it's a symbol of what the hell happened here the last 2 years with guys that you thought would be core players. Because, of course, It's not Max Domi. Like, that makes sense. He's got a decent salary number. They control him for two more years, but then you could lose him for nothing after next year anyway. It's because he'd be an unrestricted free agent. He was injury prone. He did not live up to the billing. They wanted him to play center. He really couldn't. They had to move him back to the wing. Didn't jive with Tortorella. All, you know, this is all well documented. It's really the fact that who he came here for is Josh Anderson. Josh Anderson should have been a cornerstone Blue Jacket. And there was some disconnect that happened, and he had to be traded. And Max Domi was the get back. And so now Max Domi's left available for Seattle in the expansion draft. And you say to yourself, well, okay, that makes sense, injury prone, all of that. But it's really, he was the get back for Josh Anderson. And that failure is a part of why we are where we are with the Blue Jackets, where we are going to be very clearly tear down to the studs, rebuild. And I'm for it. I'm supportive of it. I don't think you can do it any other way here. But it's a reminder of that to me, Bids.
Absolutely. A couple things. I'll touch on the rebuild in a minute because I'm with you on that 100%. With Domi, I was surprised to see this too, because I was hoping it wasn't working out because it was just a personality clash with Torts, as you mentioned. It turns out it must be more than that, because the new regime, which I know it's one of Torts' assistants taking over, but with JD coming back, you know, they've all decided together that no, we don't believe in this guy for whatever reason. So that's a surprise. With the rebuild, I think even if you're a diehard Jackets fan, I know it's going to be tough, but I think the best way to get this organization back on track is to do a full rebuild. They're already halfway in on that. I mean, you got 3 first round picks. I realize 2 of them are very late, 25th overall and, you know, 31st overall, I believe, or 32nd overall. But already have 3 first round picks, including the number 5 overall pick. You can get a lot for Seth Jones, both in this year's draft and future drafts, in my opinion. Trade Seth Jones, trade one of the goalies. I'd like to keep Elvis, but, you know, we'll see what they do with that. And then I'd hopefully try to sign Zach Werenski, but if he doesn't want to sign, then trade him too. I'd like to see. I think they might be able to sign him. But definitely trade Seth Jones. Definitely trade one of the goalies. You're probably going to get a second-round pick for the one of the goalies, not a first. But you can probably get a couple firsts for Seth Jones, one this year, one next year. Start piling up high draft picks. Then we're going to look up in a couple years. They already got some promising young players, you know. And then we're going to look up in a couple years if they commit to a rebuild. Trust the process, Columbus. The Blue Jackets might be good, but we're going to have to suffer through a couple of bad years for that to happen.
Well, I think, furthermore, it's the only way you can, because no one's coming here in free agency. That's just the reality. And we haven't shown that, from a superstar perspective, we've been able to retain them. You know, we've had superstars, and they don't want to play here forever. And for, it's different because, you know, Nash was somebody who I think would have, if the organization was in the place the organization has been the last 5 or 6 years with Yarmo and JD, I think Rick Nash would have played his entire career here. He was in no hurry to get out. It's just they weren't going anywhere and had never won anything, and it was weighing on him. So, you know, he did force the hand there. In terms of, this is the way. This is the only way, like, to do it is this way. Is they need to get a bunch of young guys all coming in at the same time, all under like contracts that can grow and win together, and then maybe you can talk them into sticking around long term. But there's no more Band-Aids. So I'm with you. I think the organization and I think the fan base is ready for it. And I think that the one thing you can say about JD and Yarmo is they got a great eye for talent. So, the contracts are different in terms of trying to negotiate contracts. That hasn't worked. But from an identification of talent, they're elite. So I'm with you. Give me assets. Give me picks. Give me young guys and young systems with high upside. That's what you got to get back for Seth Jones. And that's the way they got to approach the next 2 or 3 weeks, to say the least. How does Jim Harbaugh approach this season in Ann Arbor? He was extended. I was surprised that he did. Have they changed? What matters? How do you define success for Michigan football anymore? Among the questions we answer coming up next in our 20 big questions, question number 6, how is success defined for Harbaugh now at Michigan? It's a big one, certainly for the Big Ten, and certainly for us. We get into it coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Day drinking responsibly with a touch of class. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, we continue our list of 20 big questions that need to be answered over the next sports calendar year. We're at question number 6 today, and it fitting as Big Ten Media Days are at the end of this week, and as Bids mentioned, who's in for James today in the next couple of days. Harbaugh will speak on Thursday in Indy at Big Ten Media Day. He'll be the last to speak. I think it's interesting that he is the last to speak, because what that signifies is that Michigan is the second most important program in the Big Ten. And we can argue, you know, their success clearly does not designate that. But they are. They are the second most important program in the Big Ten. They have not been the second best program in the Big Ten for a very long time, but they're the second most important. And they view them still as a bell cow that they can kind of lean on and rely upon. And certainly we've done our part, and that's the reason Ryan Day is going last on Friday, because that's the biggest program is going to go last on Friday. So Michigan will go last on Thursday, and that's with purpose. We talked about this a little bit off the top, Bids. This is and I've said this many, many times to the point of people getting sick of it. I had this wrong. I had this wrong. I did not have what has happened to Harbaugh. I think the first couple of years led you to believe that we were headed in the right direction. And I define the right direction as a viable Michigan team. I define the right direction as a Michigan team that's a contender for the Big Ten, that threatens us, that beats us every once in a while. I mean, I think that that's important. They haven't. And it's gotten worse and worse and worse. he has become more despondent to me, almost aloof as the seasons have stacked up. I've had a theory that 16 broke him, and he hasn't really been the same since. I don't know if he's ever gotten over it. And you see it in recruiting where he's given up on the state of Ohio. You see it in his coaching staff. I mean, the notion that we hire people from his staff, can you imagine that? I mean, think about that. Like, it's just such, it's taken such a hit. And if you go back to those first 2 years, and certainly they didn't have the talent in 15 to match our talent, and that team was mad coming off the loss to Michigan State, and it was what it was. But 16, they were the better team in that game, I think you could argue. I think you can do it with a pretty straight face. They were the better team, and they never responded from what happened in that game. And you look at what's happened since, and you go, I don't know what they're supposed to be. His contract was up. He floated it out to the NFL. Hey, come get me. I'm willing to go. No takers. And so Michigan gave him a contract at a lower rate. And now you say to yourself, you answer this question, how is success defined for Harbaugh at Michigan? I'll be honest, I don't know. I don't know how it is.
Well, I will say they need to go 8-4 in the regular season. I don't think they're going to get there. Their over-under is 7.5. I feel like the under is a very safe bet there, and here's why. I think for them to hit the over, that means they're going to need to enter the game at 8-3. Do I have that right? Because they're not going to beat Ohio State. So no. I think 7-5 is their ceiling. I really believe that. So if you're into the sports gaming, you can get Michigan under 7.5. That would be my advice. Here's why. Their roster's depleted. They've got some good players. Like, they have one player that would start for Ohio State. One, Daxton Hill. One. They've got some other good players, but so they're, even their starting lineup's not that good. They're going to have a new quarterback, either the transfer or true freshman, J.J. McCarthy. I guess Cade McNamara has somewhat of a chance. Their offensive line's depleted, and they don't have good depth. And they got a bunch of new coaches that could be in over their head, not just their head coach who seems in over his head, but a bunch of new assistant coaches. Their offensive line coach, Bo, has never been an offensive line coach before. They have a defensive coordinator that's never been a defensive coordinator before. Jury is still out on Josh Gattis as offensive coordinator, speed and space. And Phil, I think of all the people that do college football stuff, not including my good friends here in Columbus, I think Phil Steele is the best. I think he is the best. I know I'm not alone in saying that. Do you know where he has Michigan ranked this year nationally? 60th. 60th nationally. 60th.
That's sad, man.
So,
that's
man,
bad.
I really
it's bad
think,
for
Bo,
us. It's bad for the league. It's bad for – it's just bad.
It is bad.
It's
and
bad.
You mentioned his contract.
It's
they gave him a contract extension, like, quote unquote, no buyout, lesser money. He's a dead man walking. Here's my prediction. I think they're going to enter the game at 5-6. If you look at their schedule, it's not that easy. They play Wisconsin. Washington won't be easier. There's some other games that I think they're going to drop. Indiana, Penn State. I think they're going to enter the game at 5-6. Ohio State's going to beat him. And that'll be Jim Harbaugh's last game at Michigan. They'll finish 5-7, and then he'll go out with a loss in his own house to Ohio State. Now, maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe they can get to 8-4. I don't think so. That means they're going to have to enter the game at 8-3 because they're not beating this Ohio State team. Ohio State's going to be frothing at the mouth to play them after not getting to play them last year.
How do we
year.
Do
you
that?
You know Ryan Day does not
do
like
we,
Harbaugh.
How do we do that? How do we continue to care more about the rivalry than they do? Even though we annihilate them. We annihilate them. I mean, it's not even close. It hasn't been close for... They won twice in 20 years. Like, let's... This is no rivalry. This is no rivalry. It's not.
This is what I dreamed about as a kid,
it's not 10-year wars.
I dreamed about
it. I know it is, but it's not good. It's not good. Because they are... Like, you can't call them that team up north. They're not that team up north. They're Michigan. Don't cross out M's on campus. Why? What's the point? They're no threat. They're no threat.
Cross out
A's for
Alabama.
Because a bunch of old guys like us... Remember, yeah, right. I mean, do C's for Clemson or A's for Alabama. Like, they are not on the level. You said there's one guy for Michigan who would start. I'll trust you on that. How many teams in this league have more than one who would start? Probably several have at least two, or maybe some have three. Admittedly, nobody's got 10, but somebody's got two or three. They got one? Michigan? Come on.
It's crazy.
It's no good.
It's
no good.
Crazy what's
He's
happening.
Given up. He has given up. He
well,
was
like
a guy
a coach
who
away.
Was broken.
Yeah, I feel like they're a coach away, though, Bo. I feel like I
He's
wouldn't
dug such
about,
a hole, though,
find,
Bids.
You're right. It wouldn't be right away.
The hole
but
is
if they
so
find
deep.
The right, I think, if, I mean, coaching is important
coach
regardless
what,
of sport.
Though?
From from being a viable threat, like you were saying, not being a team that's going to win national championships and be like better than Ohio State like every year, but a team that can threaten Ohio State, maybe beat them every, you know, once every 3 or 4 years, challenge at least for Big Ten titles, not challenge to be the fourth best team in the Big Ten East, which is what they are right now. Now, who is the right coach? I don't know, but I think coaching is important regardless of the sport. I think it's the most important in football. I really do. And
I think Matt Campbell would have taken the job in a second. And that's a little bit of pay attention to the scores. I think he would have taken the job in a second. As good as his team is this year at Iowa State, I think Matt Campbell was maybe not totally thrilled that he didn't get a talking to when we hired Ryan Day. You know, an interview. I think the dream job for him was Ohio State, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, he's a kid from Northeast Ohio. Like, that's the dream job. But I think that he was probably a little sore that there was no, like, he couldn't even get on the phone with Gene. Right? Hey, let me talk about what I've done here. Maybe I got a shot at this thing.
No, we got our guy.
Clearly,
already.
We've made the right decision. We got our guy. It's fine. But I think he would have crawled bare-chested from Ames to Ann Arbor on I-80 to go on the turnpike to get to Ann Arbor to take that job. And I think he would have taken it this year, even though he's got a really good team at Iowa State coming back. Could be wrong, but I feel like he would have. Why would you not have made that move? What in the heck have you seen from Harbaugh? And it's not even just what he's done on the field. It's the trajectory negative. They're going the wrong direction in recruiting, in their own guys. It's a program without direction. And you're going to, let's do more of it? I talked to a diehard Michigan guy, a buddy of mine this summer, diehard Michigan guy. And I asked him, I said, where are you with this? And he goes, you know, I've kind of given up. Like, we're not Ohio State. We're never going to be Ohio State. He's like, I feel bad for my son because he's almost 50. And he goes, obviously, like, he's never going to know what I knew in the 90s or the 80s. He's never going to know that. You know, his entire life. See, there's, for all of the talk of the 90s and how painful those were, we were putting some of the best teams in the country into that game. Some of the most talented teams in the country into that game. Like, look at what Michigan has trotted out, save for a year or two here and there. Look at who they brought in to play quarterback in some of those games.
Right. John O'Korn.
Oh, my gosh.
My goodness.
You know, I mean, they just have fallen off.
Yeah, not exactly Tom Brady and Elvis Gerbach and some of the guys that we used to see play.
And furthermore, look who we trotted out. Look at the Eddie teams. You lived through the 90s. You know the talent on those teams. And so you were putting a team in that game that was 11-1 or undefeated in some instances, and maybe the most talented team in the country. And they haven't done that. They haven't done that in a long time. And certainly you're old enough, if you remember the 90s, more likely than not you remember the 80s where Earl had some success. Like, there's none of that. And there's no positive momentum at all. I'm with you. I think they're 5-6. I think you're right. And I think I think 5-7's in play. I think at best he goes 6-6. And I don't know what would you sign up for more of that. Like, if we bludgeon them in Ann Arbor, you're going to go, oh yeah, yes sir, may have another. I don't know how long you do. So I don't know how you define success for him. I'm with you. But the one thing I don't know is I don't know that they care. I don't. It feels like there's an apathy for football at Michigan that is almost like, well, we know we can't do what they do, so to hell with it.
You're totally right. Which there's a sense of resignation. I see it on their message boards. There is a sense of resignation that I never thought I would see for Michigan. And for a lot of them, 2018 broke them. They came into Ohio, like a lot of people say, and I agree with you about Harbaugh. I think 2016 might have broke Harbaugh. 2018 broke their fan base from what I see on message boards, 24/7 sports, stuff like that. I mean, they came into Columbus confident. They were favored and the Buckeyes blew them out, and they have not been the same since, and they just have pretty much given up. They just are now hoping to be better than Penn State. We'll see. Rutgers right now is recruiting better than them. Olshiano learned some tricks of the trade while he was here, apparently, from Urban.
Recruited the last time he was at Rutgers. He can recruit Jersey. They'd be better off with Shiano than Harbaugh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would be. Tennessee would be better off with a Shiana.
Whatever, yes, they would be.
They've had going on down there.
Oh, yeah.
What a mess. Thanks, Clay Travis. Appreciate you on that one. Yeah, man, I think this will be his last year. And Ward Manuel is a guy, again, reading Michigan message boards. They're not happy with what he's doing as athletic director. They agree with you. Like, why did you even bring him back as dead man walking with this no buyout, you know? Clearly, they let him look for NFL jobs. No one wanted him as an NFL coach, which shows you how far he's fallen. So Ward Manuel's not doing a great job up there. Matt Campbell's going to be interesting. I agree with you. Some people disagree with us and say, well, he knows better than anybody. He doesn't want to take that job and get his butt kicked by Ohio State. But you made a good point. He might think, they didn't even take a look at me. I can be the one to turn that program around. Like you said, even though they haven't been there performance-wise, Michigan is clearly the second most important program in the Big Ten. You know, they did a study in the New York Times a few years ago. I don't know how they did this. I don't know what the metrics were, but the three biggest fan bases in order in college football, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Michigan. So Michigan has a massive fan base. And it might have been Michigan 2, Notre Dame 3, but Ohio State was 1. Those are the three biggest fan bases in college football. Michigan is a huge brand. They just have played more like Rutgers than Michigan the last 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, they have. And you answer the question, how do you define success? Hard for us to put our hands on it. We don't cover them daily. Angelique Chingalis does. She will join us next on this question. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here in the Fan.
Unlike your deadbeat uncle, we'll never leave you stranded in a ditch when you were 6. This promo may have been a touch too specific. The Fan. The best in the Midwest. You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
And our friend Dave Biddle in for James today. In the next couple of days leading into Big Ten Media Days, as we answer 20 big questions that we want answered over the course of the next calendar year, and certainly this one will get answered at the end of this football season. For perspective, great friend of the program, Angelique Chingalis, joins us, covers Michigan for the Detroit News on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Angelique, thanks so much for taking the time. I'll put the simple question we're trying to answer to you. How do you define success for Michigan this season for Harbaugh?
Well, I mean, it's got to be better than 2-4, right? I mean, that was such a pathetic performance last year. And look, I think it boils down to beating Ohio State. And, okay, let's say that's not reasonable to expect. I think you have to look at the season as a whole. Do they beat Michigan State? And assuming they lose to Ohio State, is it 52-39 or is it closer? Is it 2016 version? And I think that really determines a lot of Jim Harbaugh's fate going forward. I mean, I look at this season and I could see them going 6-6. I could see them going 7-5. I think they're in that kind of range because we don't know much about this staff. We really don't know that much about this team at this moment. And I gotta think, as I look at it, it to me it boils down to beating your rivals. And, I just don't see it happening against Ohio State. So how is that game? How do they look in that game? Do they look like a fourth quarter team? And I think that will determine Jim Harbaugh's future.
Angelique, I never saw this coming with Jim Harbaugh. When he was hired, I remember saying and writing, this is going to be the next 10-year war. And I even said, maybe it'll be a 5-year war. I thought it was going to go back and forth. I thought we were headed for another, Woody and Bo situation. How surprised are you that it hasn't worked out so far with Harbaugh?
Oh, I thought it would be that as well. And I think he's a very good coach. I do. I think he thinks out of the box on a lot of things. I think he's a smart guy. I sometimes look at that 2016 game, and I think I'm not unique with this. I think a lot of people look at that game and think, let's say JT was short. That maybe does change the narrative a little bit for Jim Harbaugh. You get that win in Columbus. And, maybe Michigan's getting a few more of those 5 stars that Ohio State's picking up, but that's not how it happened. And, you look at last season, and I know it was an anomaly, with COVID and playing the 6 games, and they didn't play those final 3, so it's a really very small sample size, but they came into that season talking about how they had practiced, since they got there in June, and they were going to be this and that. And they weren't anything like that. And you saw a team that just looked really collapsed already early against Michigan State. And you're like, well, where's the leadership there? Where's the coaching? And to me, that was lacking. And, so I was surprised. But I have also seen a guy in the last few months in Jim Harbaugh who looks more like the guy who showed up in Ann Arbor. He's got a lot of energy. He's got a young staff that he really likes and the players love. So, you know, I really want to sit back and watch how this unfolds, because if they don't get some serious wins and obviously some big wins on the road, and obviously Ohio State, I just don't know how he goes forward at Michigan.
Yeah, I guess I understand, like, he's a favorite son, right? He was the guy that was going to save it. Mm-hmm. And to me, from the outside looking in, it seemed like, and I've said this before on the air, and I maybe even have posed this question, it seems like 16 broke him from a spirit standpoint. I mean, he was, an enthusiasm unknown to mankind and all of that stuff. And he was winning some battles in recruiting. And, you know, he loses the Zach Harrison battle in the state of Ohio. And then it seemed like we talked to recruiting guys. It seems like he's punted on the state of Ohio. He's not recruiting it, which is wild to me that you would. I don't know how that is a path for any sort of success, this entire new staff. And he seemed like he was a broken man. You're saying that there is some enthusiasm now. Was there any real movement to saying, hey, this has been a thank you for getting some respectability back to the program, but we're good. We're going to move off of you, as opposed to giving him the extension, albeit for less money and no buyout?
I actually really like that contract. I think that was a really crafty work by Ward Manuel, Michigan's AD. Ward Manuel doesn't talk that much to the media. My sense is he could have gone either way. He really could have. I don't think he wanted to fire Jim Harbaugh, but I think he's got Jim Harbaugh on a much shorter leash now. And, you know, if they were to move on after this year, I don't think it would surprise people. I like this contract. I think I like that it's less money. I like that it's incentive-based. I like that he went out and changed things around with his staff. It does feel like a whole new, like a coaching change, a complete change. You really don't know that much about these coaches. You do, you know, some on paper, like a Steve Kling scale, what kind of coach he is and recruiter. But, you know, there's some untested guys now. Mike McDonald, who's never coordinated defense, is a defensive coordinator. And, you know, going back to 62-39, to that game, you know, a lot of people thought that Michigan should have moved on from Don Brown at that point. And Jim Harbaugh didn't. And now he did. And I'm curious to see what that changes. Because I'm talking to a lot of the defensive players, they really like this staff and what's going on with it. And it has brought a different energy and a different vibe, but they say that a lot. So, you know, I just think it's a really hard call where this is going. And, Jim, he's in the best shape I've ever seen him in. He's fit. He's been working out a lot, apparently. And he does seem like he's got, he's recharged by this staff.
And you got to make sure you don't wear any red to any press conferences. I understand he's banned the color red now in Ann Arbor. Real quick, Angelique, if it does go south for Michigan this year and they do replace Jim Harbaugh, who do you think they should go after?
I've been saying this for a long time, and people think I'm nuts, probably, because he's young and has been in the business for 10 years. I think if you want to stay with your Michigan lineage, I think he's right there. I think you go with someone like Mike Hart. He's young, but he is driven. He's extremely organized. He really gets how things run. Yeah, he's young, but, I don't know, since when did youth mean that you couldn't handle something like that? Beyond that, I don't know where they go. I think this is a tough, tough job. I think you're inheriting a situation that just doesn't, it seems to be more stagnant than getting better. And so I think you want somebody who understands the program. And I think a lot of people would want to get away from the whole Michigan man lineage. But I think that Mike is a guy who could do this and wants to do it at some point. Maybe now it's too soon, but I just don't know. You go back to Tyrone Wheatley, who's at Morgan State, a head coach, and bring him back. I think he'd love this job, too. But I just don't know that it's a job that people are clamoring to take. I really don't get that sense. And, it's a tough job in Columbus. It's a tough job in Ann Arbor. And it just feels like it's been tougher because they have been losing those battles in recruiting. And not only you mentioned not going after Ohio, I mean, a couple of their hires, Ron Bellamy and Mike Hart, and Steve Kleinscale were really to go after Michigan. They weren't really going after Detroit that hard. And so they're making those changes too. But, geez, I don't know. I don't know who'd want to come here right now.
Yeah, it is tough. I'll get you out of here on this one. Do you think that it is, because we have this conversation a lot, and in regard to, we're obviously very blessed with what Ohio State has been with Tressel Urban and Ryan Day. I mean, we've kind of lapped the field in the Big Ten at this point in terms of what they do. And we asked the question, is it possible for another program in the North to achieve some level of success similar to this? Do you think that is still possible at Michigan the way that it was 20 years ago?
Wow, I mean, that is really tough. I mean, I don't think just lap the field. I think they've lapped the field a couple times in terms of Ohio State. I think the advantage is so significant. And it really is, when you say it's a machine, it is a machine. And I say that. And they just seem to have everything. They're like on top of everything, it seems like. And not just in terms of recruiting and getting five stars. It's getting ahead on the NIL situation. And just being ahead in terms of facilities and everything. Now, I'm not saying Michigan can't get there. I do. I think that you know, I think everybody understands the tradition of Michigan and the money that's at this university. But does that translate? We haven't seen it in those years since Lloyd Carr left. But it's there. I think it's there. And is Jim Harbaugh the right guy? I mean, he's got the keys now, right now, but can he drive them to getting a little bit inching closer to Ohio State? I don't know. It's so hard to see anybody catching up and closing that gap on a consistent basis. Yes, you might see a Penn State do it. I know, the flavor of the month is Indiana. But, I think Michigan's the one program that could do it. But will it? That's really hard to say at this point, because I just haven't seen big enough strides from decision-making. And maybe these personnel changes will make a difference in terms of the new staff. But I just think Ohio State's just so far ahead. It's really hard for any team to catch up on a consistent basis.
Yeah, it is. We really appreciate it. You're the best, Angelique. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks, Bo. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, we'll see you over in Indy on Thursday. Angelique Chingalis covers Michigan for the Detroit News. And is there a roadmap? We're going to put Biddle and I in the unenviable position of running the Michigan program. How would you fix it? We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
If you're looking for the radio home of the crew, you've come to the right place. Because if we weren't, this promo would be very stupid. Proud to be your crew station, The Fan. It's First Friday Somewhere.
That's a big sense of freedom.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Dave Biddle in for threes. Bits, aside from Ohio State, is it possible for another Northern program to reach near, not this level of success, because I do think that this is one only, I think only Ohio State can do this. I mean, the combination of in-state talent, the city of Columbus, those things, I think it's one of one. But is there a Northern program that can get in the vicinity? And is Michigan one of those teams?
Yeah, I think with the right coach, Michigan can get in the vicinity. I think that's a good way of putting it. They've got to find the right coach, though. Coaching is so paramount in college football. Recruiting has been okay at Michigan. Development's been the biggest problem there. A guy like Donovan Peoples-Jones would not have been a sixth-round pick if he went to Ohio State. And he looks pretty good for the Browns. He wasn't developed very well at Michigan. He would have been a much higher pick. He was the number one wide receiver in the country in his recruiting class. So development's the biggest problem. So yeah, I think it's possible at Michigan, probably unlikely, though. Penn State would be the one.
I was going to say, Penn State, Michigan, Notre Dame, how would you rank those as most likely to do it in the North other than us?
And then right now, I think, because Notre Dame has the better of the three coaches is why they've had more success. And even though they had to play in the ACC last year, being independent helps them. But I think Penn State, Franklin's okay. But I think if they found an upgrade to Franklin, he's not bad. The thing about Franklin is he'll probably win just enough to stay there for a long time. And he's he had a bad recruiting year last year. Now he's recruiting better. But he's losing some of the best players in his own state to Ohio State. He can't keep doing that, or he's not going to be long for this world. Penn State, to me, probably has the most potential other than Ohio State. I will give Penn State the nod over Notre Dame and Michigan, but it's just because, any of those three programs can win if they have the right coach.
I'd probably rank them Notre Dame slightly ahead of Penn State, but I think those two are both ahead of Michigan. And I think Notre Dame, if the right guy, and we're seeing it with Marcus right now, Freeman, I mean, he's recruiting at a high level. And I think if you could get back to recruiting the Catholic schools like they used to and get those pipelines back up, the GCL. You think about the Catholic schools up in Cleveland. I'm just talking about schools in the area, let alone California. They've always recruited well with the California schools and the Catholic schools. Get back those pipelines. I think, to me, that program sells something that's a little bit different. And the big thing that they have going is, to your point, they're independent. They don't have to worry about even second fiddle to us. They can recruit opposite us. They don't have to worry about losing to us and being embarrassed and then trying to recruit up against us. So I think that gives them a little bit of advantage. I think Michigan is the third, and I think this, the talent in the state of Michigan and this talent in the state of Pennsylvania from where it was 25 years ago just isn't what it was. And so it's hard, and you have to – I think Michigan, even more than Penn State, is dependent on Ohio. I mean, there's no other way. Like, they have to win battles in Ohio. I don't know that Penn State does. I don't think Penn State has to go win battles in Ohio to be elite. And I don't think Notre Dame does. But Michigan does. I think they have to. And so if you're tasked with the job of how do you fix Michigan, you know what? I don't hate what Angelique said on my cart. I think they're at that point. I think they're at a point where they could take a flyer on somebody like my cart. I was impressed with him at Indiana. And I don't know. Campbell would be my first call. He would have been my call last year. He'd be my call, period. But I mean, I think they're at a point where they need to find somebody who can identify with young people in this region. You've got to recruit within 200 miles of your campus, and they're not doing it.
And it's crazy. You go back and look at some of their best teams. It wasn't just like, you know, some of their star players were from Ohio, which they were. Half of their roster, Bo, was from Ohio. Literally, I'm not joking.
It has
half
to be.
Half of their roster was from Ohio and Michigan. When they would do those like player introductions, I go back and watch like old film of Archie, who was before my time, and you know, they do the player introductions before the game. The guys come out, take their helmets off, and they say their name and their hometown. Like the Michigan guys, like half of their team was from Ohio. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And you don't have to necessarily get the, let's say, not that there's many five stars that come out of Ohio, but the best of the best from Ohio, but you need to recruit Ohio better than Kentucky is recruiting Ohio. Right now, Kentucky is recruiting Ohio exponentially better than Michigan. It's like you said, they've kind of given up on recruiting Ohio. It doesn't make sense. Jim Harbaugh himself was born in Ohio. He played with guys. Right. Half his roster was from Ohio. Guys that have won Heisman Trophy, their last two Heisman Trophy winners, Desmond Howard, Charles Woodson, from Ohio, Elvis Gerbach, from Ohio, on and on and on and on. They've got to get back into recruiting Ohio but development has been awful there, which is why I think they're going to move on from Harbaugh after this year, and we'll see if they find the right coach. Mike Hart, to me, I mean, that would be one hell of a roll of the dice. I mean, you know, Angelique's close to it.
Don't you think she could be on the money? Do that though.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe if you can't get Matt Campbell. If there was ever a time, I agree. I hear. Yeah, I hear that. If you can't get, I wouldn't want him to be my number one choice if I was running Michigan. No. I would definitely try and get him. But if Matt Campbell said, "Nah, I don't feel like getting my butt kicked by Ohio State every year. I'm going to hold out here at Iowa State and maybe wait out. Maybe Ryan Day goes to the NFL, then I'll go to Ohio State." If you can't get Matt Campbell, maybe you do roll the dice with Mike Hart. I would need to know a lot more about how he's handling things behind the scenes and everything. He's not even an offensive coordinator. He's not even been a coordinator. He's just running backs coach. That'd be one heck of a promotion, especially at a place like Michigan. What I would probably do, and I don't have a name, find the next, you know, not that you're going to find Tressel. Find a guy at a lower level who's just crushing it. Brian Kelly would have been a good example. He was in the state of Michigan winning D2 national championships at Grand Valley State. They didn't even give him a second look. And he had to go to Cincinnati, then he goes to Notre Dame. Yeah, PJ would be, I would
now
go after PJ.
You can't put an oar on a Michigan helmet, but I mean, he was at Western Michigan and had a lot of success. So,
yes.
You know,
yes.
That would be somebody who knew that area, but yeah,
I'd go after him.
I don't know. Yeah, they're in a tough spot. It's a really tough spot. And, you know, when you hear, you know, and Angelique covers it and she goes, they're looking at 6-6, 7-5. And you and I are saying, yeah, bet the under on 7.5. That's their reality. That's the reality of where it is. And it's a road to nowhere. It's where it is right now. And they're not worthy of, you know, worrying about calling them Michigan or worrying about, like, you ought to be able to wear navy blue at the Ohio State facility all you want. You own the color. What's the problem? Wear it whenever you want. Don't worry about M's. Don't worry about giving them cute little nicknames or countdown clocks. They're nothing. They're nothing at this point. And there's nothing in the foreseeable future to lead you to believe it's going to change. You imagine being them? Like, we got Quinn Ewers coming in. We got these three kids playing for the quarterback position this year, and you got Ewers coming in next year.
It's mind-boggling.
How are we getting out of this?
Right.
You're not.
You're right. And that's the thing. A coach wouldn't be able to come, and even the right coach wouldn't be able to come in and just flip things on its head like Tressel did, because even though Michigan was ahead of Ohio State, it was more of like, you know, the talent gap wasn't that, you know, it kind of was maybe in 2001, but it was just that the mentality of Cooper. He just treated it like any other game, and then they just got the mental edge. So they're not going to find a coach that's going to come in and just flip it. But if they can find somebody, you know, who can come in and, you know, just right the ship a little bit, you're not going to get past Ohio State. Again, I keep repeating myself, but if they can just find the right coach, Michigan has potential, not to get past Ohio State, but not to be this team that they've been, especially the last 10 years. This is a joke. They're going to be fighting for four. I'm telling, it'll be Ohio State, Indiana, or Penn State. Those will be the top three. And then Michigan's going to be fighting for fourth in the Big Ten East. And it's not going to be easy. Right. Maryland's going to be decent. No. Rutgers is going to be decent. Like, it's going to be difficult. Michigan State's going to be terrible, but Michigan State beat them last year. So, and you know, Michigan State will get up for that game. They'll play over their heads like they always do. So, I don't know, man. It's just, they can get back to being the second best team in the Big Ten East. I think that's what they need to do. But right now, they're like the fourth best team. And it's unbelievable to say that when you consider what happened in the 90s and for years before that.
Yeah, absolutely. We get Thing or Not a Thing up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here in the Fan.
If it's Buckeye football you crave, you come to the right place. And if it's day drinking you crave, you've also come to the right place. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Two men complaining about first world problems.
You're not getting the point, kid.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
It's time for a little Thing or Not a Thing. Chops is here. Hit it, Chops.
Bishop and Laurinaitis. Thing or Not a Thing.
Sponsored by Geico Insurance.
Let's get it going on a Monday. ESPN ranked all 130 college head coaches as players. The top five, one, Jim Harbaugh, two, Pat Fitzgerald, Josh Heupel, Mike Gundy, and Steve Sarkisian rounding that out. Ryan Day was ranked 43rd. Thing or Not a Thing?
Oh, it's a fun thing. You love a list. It's list season. Obviously, there as a college player, Pat was more accomplished, right, than Jim?
Yeah, but Harbaugh was a first-round pick. I think Fitzgerald was an All-American.
Great NFL career, played a long time. But didn't Pat win like one of the big?
Yeah, I think he might have been first-team All-American, whereas Harbaugh was not. But I'm just saying, just being a first-round pick shows you that Harbaugh was, you know, had a good college. But I when I initially saw this, I was thinking I would have put probably Pat Fitzgerald over Harbaugh. Then I thought, well, Harbaugh was a first-round pick.
That's a great point, yeah.
Huh, I don't know. And I had to go back and look at that. I thought for some reason he was like, not today, but a few weeks ago, I can't remember, a couple months ago, I was thinking Harbaugh was like a second-round pick by the Bears, right? And we looked at it, and I think he's like 17th overall first-round pick. I had forgotten about that.
Pat won the Bronco Nagurski and the Chuck Bednarik.
Yeah. Yeah, he was more accomplished, you'd have to say. So I'll say, to me, this is not a thing. Here's why. They're lucky they're not including the FCS coaches in here, because then it'd be Deion Sanders 1, Eddie George 2. All the good players are coaching at the FCS level.
That's true. Holy cow. So just think about Pat as a player. It's a great job out of you. Pat as a player, two-time Bronco Nagurski, two-time Chuck Bednarik, two-time Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, two-time consensus All-American.
Yeah, and a hell of a head coach, too. Yeah, Mr. Northwestern. Yeah. Yeah, he should be number one on that list. He should be.
That's pretty good, yeah. Where the heck was he drafted? What happened?
Was he like a seventh-round pick
or something? He was not drafted after his senior year. Undrafted. He must have ran like a 5-5. Two-team consensus All-American. He must have. Wow, that's crazy. That's unprecedented for somebody that accomplished. There's not much precedent for that. Somebody be that accomplished and go undrafted.
Tennis player Coco Gauff announced Sunday that she will not be competing in the Olympics after testing positive for COVID-19. There are also reports that two athletes in the Olympic Village have tested positive. Thing or not a thing?
It's going to be a huge thing, because this is going to be more and more of this. There will be a lot of this. And that you're getting the first wave of it. There will be more. And you're going to lose a lot of athletes over the next couple of weeks. Now, a lot of them we probably won't know, like we know who Coco Gauff is, but there will be much more of this to come.
Yeah, this is a massive thing, as Bo said, and here's why. This is very disappointing to me. Now, you know, maybe she did get the vaccine and she still got COVID. That's possible. Unlikely, but possible. If she's unvaccinated, it's disappointing to me. Here's why. I saw a stat out of Los Angeles. A hospital had 400 COVID patients last week admitted to the hospital. All 400 of them had one thing in common: unvaccinated. That's either a massive coincidence or the vaccinations work. So it's disappointing when I hear these athletes that, and I get it to a certain extent because there's so much misinformation out there, and they're probably hearing things that they don't like to hear. But when you hear something like 400 out of 400 patients, all were unvaccinated, well, that should tell you everything you need to know right there.
Yeah, but to be fair, we have people who have been vaccinated who are positive too.
Right.
They're just not hospitalized.
Right.
So that wouldn't stop this. Like, she tested positive. She may be vaxxed.
Right. And I recognize that. Yeah. That's, and I preface it with that.
I think the other thing we got to play through this. This is going to happen in the league.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if guys have been vaxxed and they feel fine, they're asymptomatic, you got to let them play.
I agree with that. If they've been vaccinated and they're asymptomatic, what are we doing here? Like, you're not going to be hospitalized.
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
Michigan's officially licensed retailer, MDen, is offering jerseys with player's specific name and numbers on it. Technically, you have to fill it out and customize it yourself, but they'll sell them. The players, if they sign the deal with MDen, will receive at least $10 per jersey sold. Thing or not a thing?
I mean, I think that's a thing. They should do it. They should do that at Buckeye Corner, do it wherever. I mean, they should do that. They should do that deal with the kids and give them a little taste. And you think about a custom jersey. What is it? Like, is that like $100? I don't know what that is.
I think it was saying it retails from like $130 to $180.
And you're giving the kids $10 of that.
Yeah, so what are you paying Nike for? I wonder what the profit is at the MDen on a jersey. So like they buy them from Nike at what price?
And I think it said the wholesale price was like $60, somewhere in that range, and then it's like $130 for the iron on and $180 something for the stitched on.
Okay, so then the reason this is a thing is because they're being cheap. They need to give up a little more of the profit. Yes. They need to give up a little more of the profit. If they're profiting $120 on a custom jersey, then the kid deserves a little more than that.
If there's a Shark Tank, the athletes would be like, I'm not taking your deal. For that reason,
right.
I'm out.
I think maybe I'll take $30 a jersey or $50.
Yeah, but I bet Ohio State does something to your point, Bo. I bet Ohio State will copy this. I mean, this is going to be a copycat thing across college. People are going to say, oh, look what that school's doing. That's interesting. Let's do the same thing. I won't be surprised if the Ohio State bookstore follows suit with this.
Last one for you. It appears that LeBron snuck his own bottle of tequila into the Suns-Bucks Game 5. You can see the bottle under his courtside seat in pictures. Thing or not a thing?
A man of the people.
I'm not even convinced. Yeah. I'm not even convinced that he drinks his own tequila. He's a wine drinker. If you follow him, he's a wine drinker. So it's really a marketing thing. And getting caught probably helps him. Because he's lagging well behind The Rock on tequila sales. That Terramana The Rock is spinning is far out doing this Lobo stuff. Now, I've had Terramana. I've not had the LeBron tequila. But I think he's trying to create a little buzz here. And so in that regard, it's a thing because he probably succeeded.
Oh, see, you nailed it. You got to follow the money here. I didn't even realize that he owned it. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. I thought, look at LeBron with all his millions. He's being a man of the people. As sports fans, we've all done this, right? We've snuck in some alcohol to sporting events, you know? And LeBron being a man of the people, no, he's just marketing his tequila.
Yeah. Yeah. Slinging tequila, man. Yeah. He's got a movie out. He's slinging tequila. Oh, we're going to get to Chop's review. Is going to review Space Jam, whatever it's called. He will do that in this final hour of the program. In addition to that, who exactly is leading the Big Ten these days? If you have to put your finger on somebody, who's got the goodwill of this conference going forward? We will get that. Howard Griffith will join us at the bottom of the hours. We're a couple of days out from the start of Big Ten Media Days. You have that to look forward to, which is nice. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Telling it like it is, even if that makes you uncomfortable. Common Man and Tebow.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Sports talk distilled to its purest form. You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, final hour here on a Monday. Dave Middle in for threes today in the next couple of days. Howard Griffith will join us at the bottom of the hour in advance of Big Ten Media Days. Teddy Ginn Jr. retiring on Friday. Touched on it in the first hour of the segment for the show, for the Buckeye legend. But this is an interesting tweet from Browns Backer 78. how much of a difference in the 06 title game if Teddy doesn't get hurt? He's obviously worth points and big plays, but it seemed like it hurt the psyche of the team as well. I would co-sign that part for sure. That was incredibly deflating. I wasn't covering it like you were from the Ohio State side, but just was that happened. It was shot out of a cannon. That place was as loud as I've ever heard a stadium because it was, of course, so many Buckeyes. And then there was a oh God to it. I mean, there was that. I felt it. I'm sure the team did.
Yeah, you cut out on me just a little bit there, Bo. What did you start the segment with? I'm sorry.
I was talking about Ted Ginn and the moment when this was from a tweet that we got that said, how much of a difference in 06 title game if Teddy doesn't get hurt? He obviously worth points and big plays, but it seemed like it hurt the psyche of the team.
Oh, yeah.
And I would agree with that. It was incredibly deflating from a psyche standpoint to try to, you know, that was a huge blow to lose him in the first play.
For sure. And I still think Florida would have won the game because their defensive line just ate up Ohio State's offensive line. I mean, just destroyed them. And Troy Smith wasn't in the best shape. The banquet circuit stuff that we all know about. He even said he probably gained like 20 pounds in between the Michigan game and the Florida game. Ohio State felt like, and I felt this way too, that they had won the national championship after they won that 1-2 game. Teddy returns that kickoff. I'm sitting up there with my buddy Steve Hellwagon. We're covering it. We're in the auxiliary press box. We're out there with the fans.
Which I love that.
Spaceship in Glendale. And you get the atmosphere.
I love that.
We're around a lot of Florida fans. Teddy was coming right at us.
Yes.
He scores like he was running right at us because we're up in the end zone, way up there. And he's coming right at us, scores. I look at Steve and I'm like, basically like, here we go, ball game. And then you're right. So I still think Florida would have won, but it wouldn't have been a blowout because that was taking Teddy off the field, that was a big part of what Ohio State did. Then other guys had to step into roles that they weren't ready for. I still think Florida would have won, though. They just had a better plan. They had this young coach over there named Urban Meyer who was pretty good.
Well, he was, you know, he went away from what they had done because I had covered that Florida team, and they were, like, they didn't really use Tebow much. I mean, they used their tight ends. They use Chris Leak with quick releases. They did a lot of stuff that they hadn't shown in a while. It was a hell of a game plan. It was a really good game plan. They out-schemed them. And that defensive line was real. I mean, that defensive line was going to be a problem regardless if Ted Ginn played or not. So I'm with you. I think it would have gone the way that it went, but it was that was certainly a deflating part. This was interesting over the weekend. I'm curious what you make of this as someone who certainly covers the Ohio State football beat. Two Texas A&M football players inked exclusive interview deals. So they did it with a fan site to pay two Aggie football players $10,000 for exclusive feature interviews ahead of SEC Media Days. Now, I think a big part of this is the word feature, because this would lead you to believe long-form interviews. They are Isaiah Spiller and safety Damani Richardson. They're going to be featured on TexasEggs.com as part of a deal with a local company. And so you say to yourself, okay, if you're Jimbo Fisher and you're whoever's doing Jerry Emig's job at Texas A&M, not nearly as good as Jerry does it, but whoever that person is, how do you navigate this?
This is a mess. This is an absolute mess, and we had to get together over the weekend with some of the guys on the Ohio State beat, play a little poker, and this was one of the main topics of conversation. And just think about this. Now, Ohio State hasn't said yet whether they're going to allow their athletes to do that, but if they don't let them,
they can't prohibit them.
That's what I've said. Some of the guys on the beat kind of disagree with me, but we'll see about that. But like, this is such a mess. So let's say for example, 11 Warriors buys a player. Bucknuts, such a weird thing to say. Bucknuts buy as a player, right?
Right.
And then I'm writing my post-game column, and I'm just, you know, I do an analysis after the game, very opinionated. You never want to blast college players, but you know, this guy didn't have a very good game, you know, something like that. Whoa, is Biddle only saying that because that's an 11 Warriors guy? Or then, you know, my buddy Dan Hope at 11 Warriors, he says something negative about the guy that you know, Bucknuts has sponsoring their product. Oh, is Dan Hope just doing that because he's talking about a Bucknuts guy? And this is just one of many things. It is a complete mess. And are media companies going to have to get into this? Like, are you going to have to now pay for interviews? I mean, we knew NIL was going to be fascinating and it was going to be the wild, wild west. And here we are. I mean, we're seeing it come to fruition already.
Now.
It's good. And I tell you, we're going to see many, many more things like this that are just like, wow. And I don't know how it's going to play out, Bo. I don't know if Ohio State's going to allow it. I don't know if – I will say this, full disclosure, I've asked already 24/7 Sports CBS if we're going to get involved in that, because I've had parents already ask me. Sure. They've said no. We're not getting involved with it. Slippery slope. We're not getting involved with it. Now, if everybody else gets involved with it, could that change? We'll see. But our company's not going to do it. But I think a lot of companies will. I don't. Maybe not necessarily on the Ohio State beat, but I bet there'll be at least one or two on the Ohio State beat. This is going to be very interesting to follow.
Now, I don't know. I don't cover Texas A&M. I don't follow Texas A&M. So I can't tell you, like, is the Texas A&M fan base clamoring to hear everything Isaiah Spiller and Damani Richardson have to say? I don't know. To me, $10,000 for an exclusive interview, you better be a quarterback.
Right. You better be the starter.
Right? Like somebody who's touching the ball all the time, or you better be a first-round pick. And I don't know if these guys are or not. Could be my own ignorance on that fact, and I acknowledge it. I think the big – you touched on all the deals from the beat perspective and how tricky it is from that perspective. I think it's most tricky for Jimbo Fisher and for whoever's doing Jerry Emick's job, because part of that job is a responsibility of putting these kids in front of the media. This is the relationship. It's the way that it's been forever. I mean, that's the deal. If you're the star, it's just like no one will ever forget who was there, the Fiesta Bowl against Texas, when Todd Beckman started because they didn't want to put Pryor available to the media. And Todd was out there at those media availabilities.
Oh, that's right.
Remember that absurdity?
Oh, yes.
We're going, Todd,
yes.
Why are you here?
And then he started the game.
He's going, you tell me, man. I don't know. It was one of the cruelest things. I love Tress, but that was one of the cruelest things I've ever seen. But, like, what is the job? Okay, so what if these kids say, sorry, Texas A&M Jerry Emick, I'm not going to talk to them. I'm not talking after the LSU game because I only talk to TexasEggs.com.
There's nothing.
This is what
do.
I said last week, Bids. Yeah. It's what I said last week's. Right now, Gene Smith and people of his ilk need to get on the phone with other like-minded athletic directors and say, we need rules now, because the NCAA is not going to supply any. They're out. We saw that last week. Emmert Chip pushed the chips in. We're done. We're not going to govern college athletics anymore. Okay, great. Somebody's got to. You have got to have a set of rules that everybody. The NFL has rules.
Right. That's such a,
if you're the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, you have to talk to the media once a week. That's the deal.
Yeah. And now
you can't say, oh, no, I only talk to, can you imagine Baker or Joe Burrow going, oh, yeah, no, I'm not doing I only talk to the Inquirer or the Plain Dealer. I don't talk to anybody else. Wait, what?
That's what we're headed for.
That can't happen. So they have to have a set of ground rules right now. I mean, this should have been, I'm guessing it's already taking place behind the scenes, Bids, but you can't be in a scenario where, just like we were talking about the Michigan thing with the jerseys, like, there has got to be, you cannot be Gene Smith, Ryan Day, Chris Holtman, and reacting to, and their equivalents around the country, reacting to what other kids are doing at other schools. There has got to be a set of ground rules that everybody abides by. Otherwise, it's lawlessness. And this is the first one that's like, this is one where I don't really know what to do here. Do you have power over these kids if you're Texas A&M?
You don't. I mean, for example, this is obviously before NIL, since we're like 2 weeks into it, but like Kendall Sheffield, corner Kendall Sheffield, when he was at Ohio State, the kid that transferred from Alabama, went to a JUCO, then transferred to Ohio State, ended up being a third-round pick. He didn't do interviews until Rose Bowl Media Day of his final year, and he just told Jerry he didn't want to do interviews, and Jerry abided by that. So they cannot make the kids do interviews. Now, you could say now that they're getting paid, maybe they're not technically amateurs anymore. But no, this is going to be a mess, and I don't know how they're going to handle it. Again, like you mentioned, it's my contention, and you said the same thing, that I don't think Ohio State could prevent, and maybe they could try, but it would be a PR nightmare for them. What if the kid went on social media, Bo, with all this powerment to the players, and everybody's like, we got to get these kids paid for what they're doing? Let's say a kid goes on there and says, well, I had this $10,000 deal, but Ohio State's not letting me do it. And it's, you know, oh man, that would blow up faster than a few years ago when they had the, remember the, you can't tweet at the Urban Meyer press conference. That lasted for one day. Ohio State is so big. They put that you can't tweet at an Urban Meyer press conference. Some of us complained about it. And then that was like a national story. The next day, Ohio State rescinded it. This would be that times a million. So I don't know. And again, you get back to, so I'm only going to talk to Bucknuts. I'm not going to talk to 11 Warriors or vice versa. Like, it's just, I think we're going to have the Wild West this year. There's no governing body. I think it's going to take a wild year like this, maybe two, but eventually I think you're right. I think the major ADs, maybe the commissioners of the Power Five conferences would be the best way to do it, but I don't have any faith in Kevin Warren at all. That's one of the things I'm looking forward to at Big Ten Media Days, Bo, is to ask him, why didn't you believe in the authenticity of the letter from Ohio State's parents? Like, there's so many things I want to ask this guy. I'm sure he'll filibuster for like a full 30 minutes.
I'm curious to see what that looks like, what he allows and what they allow and how open he is to answering those questions. We're going to get into that in a second. One last thing on this point. So $10,000, you get to talk to this Isaiah Spiller and Damani Richardson from Green Print Real Estate Group. They better be interesting.
Right.
Right?
Right.
If you're paying them $10,000 a piece, they better be interesting. And then, because now they are employees, to a certain extent, of this website and this sponsor. They are employees. So now you say to yourself, so let's say you work for TexasEggs.com and you go interview Isaiah Spiller and he doesn't give you much. Say it's not that interesting. I mean, let's be real. These are college kids. They aren't always that interesting. Not every kid's Tyvis Powell, right? Not every kid's Joshua Perry. Not every kid has a lot to say. Some of them don't. I don't know if these kids do or not. I have no idea. But if you're them and you say, hey, man, we're paying you. You going to say something interesting or not? Like the only way this works is if there's clicks on the other end.
And they'll never say anything negative about them, Bo. Think about that. You're like, let's say you're a subscriber to Texas Ags, and you're not going to say anything negative if you're a writer for that site. I mean, maybe if you're doing your job well, you will. But if you're paying these kids $10,000, let's say they get in trouble with the law. Let's say they're just playing terrible. And you're paying them $10,000. Are you going to be a true journalist and say that and call a spade and say they're not playing well, or this guy's getting in trouble off the field? Or are you going to be like, well, we're paying them $10,000, so we can't say anything? It's going to be the latter.
No, I think it'd go the other way. I think they could go, we're paying you $10,000, so we can. I can say whatever I want about you. I'm paying you.
Okay, that's true.
Take it from the perspective of, you're an employee of mine now.
I just wonder if these fan sites will do that, though. I just wonder if they'll
do
that, though. They won't want to make their own guys look bad. They won't want to make their own guys look bad.
No, I think you're right there. But this blew my mind. I don't know how this gets sorted out, but it's going to have to get sorted out quick, because there's going to be copycat deals that are going to happen around the league. And if it's $10,000 for these two, like, what would CJ be worth if he wins the job?
Bidding war.
Like, we can talk about running backs and safeties, right? DJ down at Clemson for his exclusive thoughts for the entire year. What's that worth?
My goodness.
So that has to get sorted out in a pretty big hurry. Otherwise, the control is going to completely be lost, and you're going to have answering to nobody, honestly. Big Ten Media, you're looking for leadership. We didn't have it last year in the Big Ten. Do we have it now? We get into that coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
The offseason is a myth. Serving you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to feed your sports addiction. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. A linebacker and a man of leisure.
This doesn't even make sense.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
And Dave Biddle in for three. So is Chops. Time for a pop-up movie review. Hit it, Chopper.
All right, Space Jam: A New Legacy is at least amusing, but it just lacks the charm of the first one. It's hard to say why, but it probably lies somewhere in the "this is a billboard for Warner Brothers"-ness of the whole thing. LeBron gets sucked into the server along with one of his sons, and he must beat an algorithmic Don Cheadle in a basketball game to free them and others. It's Space Jam, but in a computer. I thought the team assembly part through various WB properties was fun and somewhat clever, but they went too far with the crowd at the game being characters from various other IP they own, including like a Clockwork Orange being in there. Who's that for? who's watching Space Jam and is like a huge fan of A Clockwork Orange. So I thought that was distracting, to say the least. It was filled with little gags, some good, some cringe. Overall, though, I just wanted them to be more Looney Tunes-y. It just seemed like random stuff they were throwing at the wall. This was more of a mishmash of whatever they could think of, sometimes to the point where you question if this movie was even aimed at kids. The most important question for me was sort of answered. Did the events of the first Space Jam actually happen in this reality? The Toons reference it, but instead of being living beings in the center of the Earth, they live in this server with all sorts of other fictional characters and stories. This is where my mind was for most of the movie, and we never got a clear, definite answer. We do know Michael Jordan exists in this world, though. Also, the scoring in the game made no sense, so the tension was limited there. Furthermore, the other basketball stars only showed up in live action for one scene with a bad green screen. Need some Barkley screen time. Space Jam 2 gets a C.
So interesting. The kids saw it on Friday. Like, my middle son and Bootsy both had nightmares because of is there one of the clowns in it or something? Like, is one of their horror?
They're like Kramer.
Pennywise from It was in the crowd. Yes,
that's it. Yeah. Like, I go. Wait a second. Why was there a scary clown in Space Jam? I haven't seen that movie, but so I went and. Bootsy had it on, you know, because it's streaming on HBO Max. And I said, boy, that's a little bit much. That's aggressive. Do we need that guy in there? So to your point, Chops, it almost is like who's it for?
It's for Warner Brothers to say, look at all these properties we own.
Yeah.
It's the C.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Did you guys see it, Bids? Anybody, your kids see it?
No. They don't have any interest in it, to my knowledge. No.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, so that was the boys liked it. I mean, they liked it, but it wasn't. I think two out of the three said they preferred the other one to this one. The other one was far more, according to them, like far more fun.
The live action stuff with the athletes is what I miss the most, because like that's some of the funniest stuff when they're at like the psych ward and stuff in the first one, and they're talking to the players, and Barkley gets shown up playing one on one by just random people on the street, and the girls telling him wanna be gone. That stuff was fun, and that's completely absent in this one.
That's a shame. Completely absent last year from the Big Ten was leadership. Completely absent last year. And so we're left going into a second season. And by the way, I will acknowledge this. Kevin Warren took a lot of slings and arrows. Deservedly so. But he was doing what the presidents of the member institutions wanted. He was not some all-powerful being who did whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted, without checks and balances. He was a first-year commissioner who the presidents of this league chose and was doing what they wanted. He's same thing that Emmert's doing. Like, and we can throw stones at both of them, but they are doing what the presidents want them to do. Their constituents are happy with them. Now, I don't know if the constituents are as happy as Warren as they are with Emmert, since he gave him a raise. And I think he's going into a brutal second year. Let's also acknowledge this, and then we'll crush him. Pandemic, name, image, and likeness. First 2 years. Good luck.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He did inherit an interesting situation, but he could not have handled it any worse. But to your point, you laid it out perfectly. He deserves the heat that he has received, but it's not just him. It's certain university presidents, and it wasn't Christina Johnson. She's not one of the ones we're talking about. She was new kid on the block. She's not now. I think she will throw her weight around more. Ohio State needs to throw its weight around. They need to act like what Texas does in the Big 12. Yep. Texas is like, listen, we run this show. And Oklahoma's like, not so much. But but still, Texas threw their weight around. Ohio State needs to do that. But, yeah, you hit on it. Mark Schlissel up at Michigan was completely against playing football. There were others. The Northwestern president changed his tune, finally came around. But there were certain presidents that wanted nothing to do with playing football. And Kevin Warren had to take the heat for them. It's ridiculous what they did last year. Hopefully, they'll get it right this year. They're not going to make kids sit out if they've been vaccinated. And like we were talking about earlier, if you're asymptomatic, but you somehow test positive, even if you've been, which is possible, you're not going to get hospitalized probably, but you can still get COVID if you've had the vaccination. But like we were saying earlier, hopefully this year they're a little bit more sensible. I think they will be. Maybe I'm being optimistic there. I can't wait to hear Kevin Warren at Big Ten Media Days. Now, like I said, he's only going to be talking for a half hour. I'm stealing my buddy Steve Hellwagon's line here. He'll filibuster for 15 minutes, and then I correct it to you. I think he'll probably filibuster for a half hour. We might not even get a question, and he'll just talk about the greatness of the Big Ten and academics and everything. It's like, can I ask you a question about all that crap from last year, sir? So I don't even know if we'll get legit questions in or if he'll even answer them, but I cannot wait to actually get a chance to ask Kevin Warren some tough questions, because when Ohio State's parents wrote that letter, for him to question the authenticity of that was ridiculous on his part. And you had to, now we know the text exchange from Christina Johnson and Gene Smith, where Dr. Johnson's like flummoxed. She's like flabbergasted that what, he doesn't believe that this is authentic. Like, what is he saying here? So he has some serious, he's got some splaining to do, Bo.
He does. Yeah, he does. And he also needs to play a central role, like him or not. He's going to play a central role in everything that we were just talking about in name, image, and likeness. Because someone's going to have to lead on that front. The quickest way to get the Power Five together in terms of coming up with ground rules is the conference commissioners. So they're going to have to get on the same page, you know, in a hurry. And so he's got a critical role. He's going to play a critical role in this. Now, I'm with you, and I've said it forever. Ohio State needs to act like Ohio State. They don't need to act like Rutgers. Throw it around. Throw the weight around. Be selfish.
Mm-hmm.
Texas is selfish. Oklahoma is selfish. Do that. You need to, because you need to serve your best interests of your constituents, not worry about Michigan or Michigan State or somebody else. Like, it seems like Penn State's pretty like-minded. It seems like Nebraska's pretty like-minded. Iowa, push it. You're going to have to push. So this will be fascinating. We'll get Howard Griffith's take on this and where the Big Ten stands and how we're going to navigate these waters with name, image, and likeness. It's going to be fascinating. He will join us with his thoughts on Big Ten Media Days coming up at the end of the week. That's coming up next. Bishman Laurinaitis right here in the Fan.
If the sound of another man slammed against plexiglass turns you on, you've come to the right place. Proud to be your home for Jackets hockey. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. A show that knows its limitations.
You'll learn to control that.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
And Dave Biddle in for James today in the next couple of days. When we talk Big Ten football, we love to do it with Howard Griffith, former Illinois great BTN football analyst, joining us on the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Howard, thank you so much for taking the time. Lots to get to with Big Ten Media Days coming up. But let me just start with your view. I'm sure you've seen the story out of Texas A&M with the players signing exclusive deals for exclusive feature interviews at $10,000. And I'm pro player. This is long overdue. Let the kids make all the money they can off their name, image, and likeness. I don't know where you stand on it, but that's where I do. But this does seem a little like a slippery slope to me. How do you view this in regard to, and by the way, coming on the same week of Media Days?
Yeah, I think it's great for the players. I think I've been a supporter of this, you know, at the very beginning. And you know, it's one of those things, and you mentioned it's going to be a slippery slope. Absolutely, it definitely is. I mean, there are going to be some growing pains that universities and players are going to have to deal with as they continue to try to navigate this area. But there's going to be issues that pop up. And, you know, whether it's, hey, the kids, the young people are spending too much time with the social media and doing other things outside of being a student athlete and also being, you know, being out there and competing, there's going to be some issues that are going to come up. But the discipline teams, I think the teams that have, you know, embraced this and just, you know, put a real good plan together, I think are teams that are going to be able to have a great deal of success and won't have as many issues as some other programs that are going to have them.
Howard, so many things I'd like to ask you, but I'm going to start in your wheelhouse at Illinois. Brett Bielema taking over. What's the vibe like Champaign-Urbana right now, and what do you expect out of Coach Bielema there?
Well, it's exciting. It's an exciting time. You know, Lovie Smith, you know, did the best job he could. But when you think about personalities and really playing to the camera, that was never really one of his strong suits. And, you know, now you've got Brett who's been around this conference, has had success in this conference. He's really got the fan base excited. He's going to have, I believe, you know, 20-plus super seniors. So we'll have a lot of leadership on that team. But like most teams, there's a lot of work they've got to get done. They've got to, you know, to prove it on the field, because they've really been struggling, you know, the last several years. So people are excited that he can get in there, turn it around. He's doing well out on the recruiting trail, not necessarily bringing in, obviously, the 4 and 5 stars right now, but he's really making a conscious effort to work the state of Illinois really hard and also the surrounding areas.
Howard, you know, we're close to it, obviously, because we talk about it daily with Ohio State football, and it does feel that there's been a pretty big separation that just keeps almost getting bigger and bigger in regard to where Ohio State is and where the rest of the Big Ten is. In regard to your job as an analyst for the Big Ten, do you see that separation as big as we see it, and do you see it as a problem for the league, and do you think there's a solution for the other teams in the league?
Well, I mean, the solution, right, is to compete on the recruiting trail, right? I think that's where it starts. It starts with players. Right? You have to be able to get the best players that you can get for your program, and also, along with that, getting the best fit for those for your program. Is Ohio State continuing to widen the gap? Absolutely. I mean, I think Penn State is a really talented football team, and they struggled a little last year, but I was excited to, you know, they still rallied and were able to salvage the year. But when you go down the roster and look at what Ohio State has, you know, it's hard to imagine anyone else in a conference that has a roster that's even close. And you just look at it, and it's not. So is it tough? Yeah, it's tough, but everybody's got to go out and recruit. You know, it's better when Michigan is doing a great job on the recruiting trail, but they've underachieved, right? The same thing, we look at Nebraska. I mean, since they've gotten to the conference, we've all been waiting for them to take that next step. They haven't been able to do that. Michigan State slipped back, and Ohio State is one of those programs that we don't see slip. It just continues to get better each and every year.
Howard, I think when Urban stepped down at Ohio State, I think a lot of teams around the league were like, okay, now this is our chance. This is our chance. And Ryan Day steps in, and there's been no drop-off. I mean, I know it's a small sample size. It's just 2 years. But the way he's recruiting, the way he handles his business, the way he runs that offense. I mean, are you surprised there's been no drop-off from Urban to Ryan Day?
I'm really not. Only from the side of what they were doing. And I go back to the recruiting side. I mean, you got to have great coaches around. You're going to lose some coaches, but you have to be able to keep that system in place. And I think one of the things that really was very clear that as long as Mickey Moradi was running the conditioning and the strength program and really who's dialed into those guys, Mark Pantone, who does a great job of building that program and continues to do so behind the scenes, there's really no drop-off. There hasn't been. And in some areas, you can argue they're better than they were when Urban. And specifically, I'd say at the wide receiver spot. Because I think there was a little bit of a tweak in, we're going to go out and get wide receivers who are polished in route running. And oh, by the way, they can run fast too. And I think if you go back and you look at a lot of Urban guys who really still had a great deal of success, but I think speed was at the top priority for those guys coming in. And then we teach them how to run routes. But Brian Hartline is doing an unbelievable job of on the recruiting trail and also developing his receivers in that receiver room. And all those coaches are. But when you start to think about, for me, when I think about this team really taking off and really where it's not close, that receiving room is a room that to me jumps out because they have those type of players, those dynamic players that are in that room competing on a daily basis.
Howard Griffith, our guest, Illinois great BTN football analyst. Love having you on, Howard. You mentioned Michigan. It was one of we're doing 20 questions that we will have answered by the time we get through the season. One of them was on Jim Harbaugh, and the question's a pretty simple one, and is, at this point in his tenure, how do you define success for him at Michigan? So I'll put it to you. How would you define success for Harbaugh this year at Michigan?
He's got to get to the championship game. And that's hard to do, right? Because Ohio State's sitting in the way. Penn State's sitting in the way. I mean, they've not met expectations. I think Coach Harbaugh would be the first one to tell you that. Now, he's made some tweaks to the coaching staff on the defensive side. So we'll see if they're able to really be able to catch up and make plays. Listen, they go out and dominate the teams they're supposed to, but the teams that are as good or as talented as they are or better, those are the games that they have to be able to win. But, you know, they haven't been able to do that thus far. And I think, you know, developing at the quarterback position is going to be key. I think when you look around the league, you look at other leagues and teams that you believe that can compete for conference championships and then move on to the 14 playoff, you got to have a quarterback. That player has got to be able to keep you in the game. And it's just not all about that position, But if you don't have one, it's going to be a lot tougher to get there, because this winning championships is all about scoring points on the offensive side. You can have a great defense, that's great, but once you get to that 14 playoff and you're trying to position yourself to have a chance to win it, of winning it, you better be able to score points, and that's something that they haven't been able to do against the top-flight programs that are out there.
Especially the way his contract is now structured, Howard, with no buyout, you know, less money per year with the incentives. It's like, it feels like it could be his last year unless he does what you said. If he can beat Ohio State and get to the championship game, it won't be his last year. But, man, if he goes 7-5 or something like that and loses to Ohio State again, do you think this is his last year at Michigan?
It's tough. You know, I don't know if it would be his last year. That's a tough side of the conference to be on in the East right now. And yeah, we're talking about Ohio State, but heck, Indiana isn't going anywhere. Those guys are just getting better over there. But I think to get back to your question, you know, I think you have to give Harbaugh also a little credit as well for even signing the contract that he signed. Because nobody's going to put more pressure on him than he is. And he wants to go out and succeed. He doesn't want to go out and not be able to have his program in the best spot that it could be in. But at the end of the day, it's all about results. At the end of the day, it's about winning. And he hasn't been able to do that in the manner that I think people that want Michigan to be great again, their fan base, to be able to get in that situation. And, you know, hopefully, you know, some of the decisions he's made on the offensive side, hopefully he's able to develop that quarterback. I think Josh Gattis is going to be a head coach at some point. I think he's really innovative in his schemes, but the offense and the defense have to be working together in concert. They can't be individuals. You got your offense over here. They have to be able to complement each other, and hopefully they're in a much better spot where they can do that this year.
Howard, I'll get you out of here on this one. What player, coach, individual are you most looking forward to hear from Thursday and Friday with Big Ten Media Days?
Wow, there's so many, right? There's so many great storylines, whether it's Mike Locksley at Maryland, who has a really talented team. Can they take the step? But I think, to me, it's probably P.J. Fleck, right? Go back two seasons ago, unbelievable season. They don't play nearly to the level that they needed to last year. And listen, there are a lot of things, obviously COVID going on and different things like that. But he made a switch at the offensive coordinator position. That didn't quite work out the way they needed to. They're bringing back an experienced quarterback in Tanner Morgan. So to me, I think one of the people I want to hear from is P.J. Fleck, because I know he wants to compete. He doesn't want to be seen as a one-hit wonder. He wants to be able to build that program and be able to do it back-to-back. So I think that'll be the person I'll be most interested right now to really have a chance to hear from and see what his plan is going to be and how his team's been adjusting this offseason.
Yeah, that's a fascinating one. Howard, always good talking to you, bud. Look forward to watching you on television, I'm sure, at the end of the week, and thanks for your time.
All right, guys. Take care. Stay safe.
All right, that's Howard Griffith, one of the best, BTN analyst, Illini great, on the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We hit three things on a Monday. Up next, Fishman Laurinaitis right here in the Fan.
Buckeyes, Jackets, Crew, and Panama Ted yelling about something being too hot. I don't understand it either. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Bo is well-groomed. James brings the boom. You are listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, time for three things on a Monday. Hit it, Chopper.
Three things with Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
All right, number one for me, we had a neighborhood block party. And if you're asking, well, why? Good question. It's valid. Very good question. But we did. So the blonde was like, oh, yeah, I'm in charge of, like, desserts for the kids. And so it was, you know, like, she's like Nutty Buddies and, you know, these popsicles with the rockets looking things and all this. And I said, let me do you a personal favor. You go buy a 25 or 100 pack of Flavor Ice, that's undefeated. She's like, oh, come on. I'm like, I'm telling you, not only is there no mess, the kids are going to crush them. That's the winner. Uncle Bo was right, kids. Flavor Ice are undefeated.
Totally. I like that one. Okay, my first thing, Reds need to get off the schneid tonight. They need to beat the Mets. 7:10 p.m. at the Great American Small Park in Cincinnati. Reds on a 3-game skid. They need to beat the Mets tonight.
Where are they?
They're in second place, but they're like, what are they, 7 games back? And they were 4 games back at the break. They come out against the Brewers, who they just swept, and then they get swept. So, pretty big swing there.
Three over 500. Okay.
Yeah, 3 over 500. They still got it. I mean, the Brewers are going to win that division, and two teams from the West will make
the
wild card team. So you're not, the Reds will be the first team out, probably. They'll be second place in the Central, maybe, and maybe the Cardinals or Cubs will catch them, and they'll probably be the first one out of the wild card. So, hey, I said before the season, if they can just keep it interesting, stay above 500, I'll be happy. I need to stick with that, but it's easier said than done.
My first thing, I got this pushback from a couple of people after talking about my new lawnmower after I was able to work enough with my foot, get the lawn mowed, and people coming at me like, oh, an electric lawnmower, nothing says man like that. I'm sorry if you've fallen for whatever weird marketing push makes you think that gasoline is somehow manly. It doesn't make any sense. It's a tool. It mows the lawn. It gets the job done. If it's battery powered, I don't care. I don't care what powers it, but that's the one I have, and it's actually easier to use because I don't have to buy gasoline. I don't have to change the oil. It's lighter. So, no, the whole weird thing with gas being like what a man uses, that's weird. Sit down.
You know, good job out of you, Chops. I haven't bought gas for a couple years, and I still feel like I'm a man. I feel like I'm doing just fine. So I that's a good job out
of
you.
Are you 40? You're a man.
I'm a man. I'm 40. Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
Yeah, and I don't buy gas because I don't need to. Number two for me. So today, this is our last sports camp of the summer. It's a lacrosse camp for the two bigs. So this is the first time that my middle is going to one of these. Like, away all day, big brother's going with him. And just a reminder to me, it hit me like a ton of bricks because he was kind of a little nervous. Man, life comes fast. Life comes at you fast, kids. And especially with the kids. Like, it seems it's impossible to me that he's old enough to go to this thing. But he is, and he did it. And the early reports are that it's going well. So good job out of you, Beamsy. But don't grow up so fast, buddy.
Well said. They grew up way too fast. All right. My second thing is I'm a huge stand-up comedy fan. I haven't sat down and watched a special. And most of these are specials that I've already seen, but I haven't watched one in a while. So I think I'm going to sit down and watch one of my favorites, which is Dave Chappelle's Sticks and Stones. But, you know, I'm kicking around some other ideas. I like Bill Burr. I like Anthony Jeselnik. I like Tom Segura. But I think I'm going to sit down and watch The Goat, Dave Chappelle.
Have you seen Maniscalco's?
I like him as well. Yeah, I like him as well. He's not in my top four, but I like him a lot.
Yeah,
I like Chris Rock.
He kills me.
Yeah, he's good.
He just kills me. Because it feels like I'm exactly... I mean, I just feel like I view the world like most people are idiots.
My second one, we took Kit out to Darby Bend Lake yesterday. They've got a little area with like a beach type thing where you can let the dogs in. So we're trying to get her to swim. She likes the water. She's not afraid of the water, but she is afraid of losing her footing. We couldn't get her to go out and chase the ball very much. Although she would wait for other dogs to come back from swimming and then try to steal the ball from them. And it's like, no, you got to earn the ball. It's out in the water. One time she chased after a dog and doggy paddled back in. But we'll have to take her back again, see if she can get more comfortable.
Throw her in a pool.
Just throw her in.
Yeah, because they swim. When you throw them in, then they swim. Number three for me. The boys, we were a late start to summer. We're exactly at the halfway point. I think there's 10 weeks of summer for the kids because they had a late start. So 10 weeks, we're at exactly the halfway point. Was actually over the weekend. Ohio, I need you to deliver, man. Okay? You have blown it to this point. We need some sun. We need some non-rain. I don't need biblical rain. Let's go. You got 5.5 weeks. Sort it out.
My third thing, I ate a healthy breakfast, and I'm going to ruin that by finding something junky to eat for lunch. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but it probably won't be healthy. I'm gonna just that's how I roll. I'll eat healthy for a little bit, then I'll completely
keep it
ruin
balanced.
It by eating something junky. Yeah, that's how I have the dad bod that I do.
I support going into lunch, not knowing what you're going to get, but knowing it's not going to be good for you. Just knowing that that's the prerequisite.
It's going to taste good.
My last one, I think my parents are trying to steal my dog. I got separate texts from them. It's like the only people who texted me all weekend. And both of them were asking, when's the next time we watch Kit? When do we get the dog again? And I was like, you'll get a chance to watch her. We got places to be that sometimes that's going to come up. But no, you cannot have her indefinitely.
Rain check all of that for when you have kids. And then see how eager they are to watch. So just take all of those and bank them, Chops. And then when you have the children, then say, hey, remember all these times you want to watch the dog? Well, now the children. You
good
can
advice.
Watch them now. All right, we're back tomorrow for more fun. Rothman and Ice up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here in The Fan.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.